The decision to force officers to declare if they're part of the Freemasons.
I'm not uncomfortable about Mason serving. I'm uncomfortable about the degree of secrecy. If we bring sunlight to it, then that avoids any conflict of interest for individuals, doesn't it, by people having to declare it.
And now the Freemasons fight back after those remarks and are going to sue. In other news, the driving test backlog not expected to end until November 2027 and... ready to get free BBC if you live on Benefit Street, but the rest of it will pay. Surely an act of treachery? Those stories and more after the 7 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, thousands of resident doctors in England are just beginning a five-day strike. That's despite warnings from NHS leaders about the flu outbreak and pre-Christmas pressures. The British Medical Association says the government's latest offer doesn't go far enough on pay and jobs. The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, spoke to LBC earlier this week, calling the walkout self-indulgent and dangerous.
I offered the BMA the chance to postpone their strike action to January. I'd extend their mandate for strike action over that period so that we could have like-for-like strike action when it's not the most dangerous time for the NHS. They have chosen not to take up that offer.
Health officials say people should still come forward for urgent care if they need it. A man has been charged with murder and terrorism over the Bondi Beach attack. Navid Akram, who is 24 years old, is accused of opening fire on a Hanukkah event on Sunday, killing 15 people. The first funeral for one of the victims has been held in Sydney. Thousands of people gathered to mourn British-born Rabbi Eli Schlanger.
The love, the unity that we felt, the brokenness that we all felt together. Honestly, it's very hard to speak right now, and I don't even really have words.
The kindest man you ever met. He'd do anything for you. He meant the world to us.
Rob Reiner's son has been charged with murdering his parents in Los Angeles. The Hollywood director and his wife Michelle were found with stab wounds at their home on Sunday. The 32-year-old didn't appear in court as expected because of unspecified health reasons. The UK appears set to rejoin the EU's student exchange programme Erasmus. It would clear the way for British students to participate in the scheme from January 2027. The latest inflation figure has just been published. The Office for National Statistics says prices increased by 3.2% in the year to November, down from 3.6% a month earlier. It comes ahead of the Bank of England's latest interest rates decision tomorrow. Cheaper tickets are being released for next year's World Cup after an outcry over pricing. FIFA says the most loyal fans of national teams will be able to access the £45 tickets, but only for 10% of allocations. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen this morning at 96.84 after closing down 66 yesterday. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 14. LBC weather, foggy and frosty to start in places, largely cloudy with showers and some heavier rain in the west, a high of 12 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
I'm Linda, proud mum of Team GB's Emily Campbell. I know from watching my daughter through the years, the slog of training can get ugly. That's why Quaker is the perfect sponsor for Team GB. Because even though their porridge looks flipping ugly, it's the ugly stuff, the real stuff, that fuels us. Quaker, deliciously real, deliciously ugly, sponsor of Team GB.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 3 minutes after seven, Wednesday, the 17th of December. Jail for the former Marine. Indeed, he was booted out of the Marines for fighting. He went to that Liverpool parade. 21 years. You're going to hear, obviously, from our reporter who covered that. You're also going to hear from one of the emergency workers and also a psychologist. What is it that we all have moments of road rage, but when does it turn into some kind of psychosis? What steps should he have taken, should anyone have taken, if you get frustrated because you can't get through traffic? Mercifully, that happens so rarely. That's why it's made such news. In other news and making news, the resident doctors on strike now for 4 minutes.
Resident doctors strike once again, this time the week before Christmas. I'm LBC's Alex Taylor-Brown at a picket line in Leeds.
Caesarean section births have become the most common form now of mum giving birth to baby in England, overtaking natural birth for the first time ever. Anna David is a professor in obstetrics and maternal fetal medicine at University College London.
It's really important to realise that caesarean sections are very safe. And if you have to have a caesarean section, they're absolutely critical. They save your baby's life, they save your life.
Easy Street on Benefit Street. Free TV licences for benefit claimants is an idea being mooted by the government. They've kind of got the idea from Germany, but it means if you're fortunate like me, and hopefully most of you, to be in employment, then we'll be paying for that as well. Plus,
Westminster Council are accused of reckless waste after £27 million worth of lucrative contracts were given to a now-collapsed building firm. I'm LBC's Henry Riley with the exclusive.
And if you're waiting eagerly for your driving test or a date for your driving test, you might have to wait a little bit longer. It's expected that extraordinary backlog will not be cleared for nearly 2 years. Yes, November 2027.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
A former Royal Marine, indeed, I'll say it again because I know it angers so many of you, he was booted out of the Marines for violence, starts a 21-year jail term for mowing down dozens of Liverpool football fans in a truly shocking act that defies ordinary understanding. LBC's reporter Liam Gotting was at the sentencing and has been following the court. I'm following the story. He was at the sentencing at Liverpool Crown Court yesterday. Liam.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, Paul Doyle stood openly sobbing in the dock as he was sentenced to 21 years and 6 months in prison. Judge Maneri said Doyle drove deliberately into and over more than 100 people and could have stopped at any time, but chose to continue ignoring the chaos and screams around him. This audio is from Paul Doyle's horrific dash cam footage, which was shown in court. During his sentencing remarks, Judge Maneri said it was impossible to comprehend how any right-thinking person could do what Paul Doyle did, adding that his actions defy ordinary understanding.
The footage is truly shocking. It is difficult, if not impossible, to convey in words alone the scene of devastation you caused. It shows you quite deliberately accelerating into groups of fans time and time again. You shouted expressions of frustration, or rather your shouted expressions of frustration underline your state of mind at the time. It not fear or panic, but an inexplicable and undiluted fury.
Now, yesterday, Nick, we learned a little bit more about the history and the character of Paul Doyle. The court heard Doyle has previous civilian and service convictions, including common assault in 1991, using violence towards his superior officer in 1992. And in 1994, Doyle spent 12 months in prison after biting off the ear of another man during a drunken fight. This police body cam audio shows what Doyle had to say for himself immediately after his arrest back in May.
Just stay exactly there.
I don't see it.
All right?
Yeah, yeah. That's just ruined and affected so many lives.
Now, of course, the car did eventually come to a stop, Nick, but the prosecution said that it wasn't because of any decision made by Paul Doyle, but rather because a brave member of the public, a former soldier named Daniel Barr, managed to get into the back and force the automatic car into park, holding it there until Paul Doyle was forcibly removed from the vehicle. Daniel Barr has been recalling his memory of that moment.
I do recall seeing they had an automatic and therefore P for park was right at the very end, so it wasn't even in the middle or anything. So I thought, like, just jam that forward as far as you can. That should stop him from memory. And it did.
Now, at the time, Nick, you might remember that a lot of people thought that this was a terrorist attack, but the prosecution said that they were satisfied that Paul Doyle had no ideological motive for doing what he did. People also speculated that maybe Paul Doyle might have been suffering from PTSD from his time in the Marines. But the truth is, Paul Doyle spent less than 3 years in the Marines, was never deployed, and was eventually discharged. Doyle nor his defense ever argued during any of the proceedings that he was suffering from any psychological disability. So the question is, why did he do what he did? Well, the prosecution and the judge say that Paul Doyle intentionally drove into the crowd that day and intended to cause serious injury, even to children, simply because he lost his temper.
Liam Gotting reporting the most extraordinary circumstances. Liam, thank you for that. 9 minutes after seven. Well, let's speak to someone who was involved on that fateful day back in May. We're going to call him James. He's an emergency responder and he was on shift. Privileged to have you on, sir. Firstly, thanks for the work you do. Secondly, can you take us through your memories of that day in May? Where were you when you first got the shout? Good morning.
Yeah, morning, Nick. It was a really good day. Basically, we were positioned and called into the street level. Everything that happened during the day was a really good day. The fans were in good spirit, really enjoying the day until this unfortunate incident unfolded.
Now, you're an emergency responder. Sorry, do I know that as a paramedic, or do you provide other services as well, James?
Other services as well, yeah.
I see. So, just help me, I do know the city, but obviously I don't know it as well as you, sir. How far away were you from where the car first entered the crowds, and what did you first hear? How did you learn of the incident?
We was approximately a couple hundred metres away. The first we heard of the incident was obviously when the teams were getting called in and the major incident was announced. And then the training and the allocations were then coming through of what we need to do and where and when.
Presumably there's some kind of code, is there, that gives you the extent of the incident that you have so that you know the level of problems that you're going to be dealing with. Does it work like that, James?
It does, yeah.
It's declared a major incident. At any point, was it feared that it could be some kind of terror attack? Because it does mirror attacks we've seen elsewhere in Europe.
Initial reports was aired on the caution of that. As you can imagine, it was quite a confusing situation at first.
Of course. So, how do you make your way to the incident? Are you in a vehicle? Are you on a bicycle, a motorbike, by foot? What did you do?
On foot.
On foot.
With the road closures and the number of fans.
And roughly, how long did it take you to get there? Just approximately, James.
About 5-10 minutes.
What did you see when you first arrived?
The scene was quite chaotic. The fans was helping out where they could. So initially it was, we'll go through an assessment process. And then we deal with the most injured people first, the most critical, and then process from there forwards.
How close did the vehicle that had driven into the crowds, how close did you get to that, James?
Probably within about 15, 20 metres.
Did you see the driver, Doyle?
Not first. So by that point, he'd been removed from the vehicle by initially the fans, and then the police intervened and moved him away, I assume for his own protection.
Yes, I think you're absolutely right. Okay, so let's focus on the work you had to do, James. What were the sort of injuries that you were confronted with?
Initially it was crush injuries, broken bones, and head injuries, which obviously is from people being projected from the vehicle, or crush injuries from fans moving to and from the area.
The fans there, if I were to ask you to describe their mood, would you say it was total bewilderment, one of fury, fear? What words would you use, James?
I'd say it was a good mix. There was certainly a lot of fear, because obviously with what's going on in Europe and historically. But also there was some very good fans that were staying to help the situation.
Right.
It was a good mix of fear and, adrenaline.
Can you remember how many people you treated, James?
Be about six and ten. I believe the other services did more.
And what was the most severe injury or injuries you had to deal with?
Broken limbs. People unable to walk.
And can you remember the age range of people you either helped or your colleagues helped?
Probably, I would say teenage up to middle age.
And how long were you at the scene?
We was at the scene until it would have been about 7 hours.
Right, that's a shift. And were they able to get the ambulances closer to the people? Because obviously, some of those folk, you're not going to ask them to walk to the ambulance because they might have a broken leg. So how did you then convey them to the relevant hospitals, James?
That was done with coordination of the other emergency services. We managed to get vehicles, obviously, as close as possible. After that, it was down to the other emergency services to do the extrications. And then we were getting, there were certain trucks that had police escort then to the hospitals.
James, lastly, you're one of those people who, and bear in mind, the listeners need just to pause and think that this was flagged on your radio as a potential terrorist incident. You're one of the people we're very fortunate to have among us who's prepared to run towards that. When you finally got home after 7 hours or whatever it was, and you were with your partner, life, whatever it might be, and you decompressed, what was the abiding memory?
I would probably say how everyone pulled together on the day, whether they were emergency services or not. And obviously the thoughts of, with the patients, the families, and everyone that, that was affected, because it was a bad thing for, you know, for other families to contend with.
Privileged speaking with you. Thanks for the job you do, James. Are you on shift today?
Yes. Going to be a busy day.
All right. I hope it's a quiet one. James, thank you. An emergency responder was on shift during that attack. Mercifully, extraordinarily, despite, I think it was a 2-ton motor car. Amazingly, no one lost their lives, which is incredible. But we look in the other side. It's obviously happy to take 21, is it 21 and a half years? 21 years. Is that enough? Presumably, he could be looking at getting out after 10 and a bit. I don't know. We'll look at that. But also how to combat or conduct yourself when you're gripped with that sign, that kind of rage. What is it the judge said? Inexplicable and undiluted fury. We'll speak with a psychologist after the news. Also, the doctor's strike is on, despite this plea from Health Secretary Wes Streeting on LBC late last week.
I offered the BMA the chance to postpone their strike action to January. I'd extend their mandate for strike action over that period so that we could have like-for-like strike action when it's not the most dangerous time for the NHS. They have chosen not to take up that offer.
And we'll be on the picket line after the news. 7:15 news headlines now on LBC. Thomas Watts.
Navid Akram has been charged with murder and terrorism over the Bondi Beach attack. Thousands of resident doctors in England are just beginning a 5-day strike, and figures out this morning show inflation eased to 3.2% in November. LBC weather, foggy and frosty this morning, largely cloudy with showers and some heavy rain in the west, a high of 12 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. The queue's on the M11 southbound. It's partly blocked because of an accident at Junction 7 Vaharlo. It's slow on the M4 eastbound. There's one lane closed. A car is having a tyre change between the M25 and Junction 4 for Heathrow. There are queues in Cranford. The A4 Bath Road westbound is blocked between Barclay Avenue and Way Avenue because of an accident. It's slow in Camberwell. Camberwell Church Street is partly blocked in both directions between Ben Hill Road and Datchula Place. That's after there was a fire in a building earlier. There's no service on the Woolwich Ferry because of the fog. On the Tube, there's no service on the Bakerloo line between Queen's Park and Harrow and Wealdstone. A minor delays on the rest of the line. That's because of an investigation. And on London Overground, there are severe delays on the Mild May line. That's after a freight train broke down earlier.
This is LBC.
When you buy a BMW approved used electric car, there are no surprises. You'll find the largest range and the widest choice. Naturally. Every car has been meticulously checked by qualified BMW technicians. Hardly a plot twist. And they always come with a battery health report and at least 12 months unlimited mileage BMW warranty. Just as you'd expect. BMW approved used electric cars. Nothing new here. Search BMW approved used electric. Obviously.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
Gift more for less when you shop at the O2 this Christmas. Save up to 70% off RRP on over 60 of their favorite designer brands, including Nike, Tommy Hilfiger, Le Creuset, the Cosmetics Company Store, and Lindt. Ticked everyone off your list. Start the festivities at one of our 30 bars and restaurants. Enjoy a movie or get competitive with bowling, climbing, interactive football, indoor skydiving, and more. Find us at North Greenwich, just 15 minutes from central London. Search outlet shopping at the O2 to start planning your visit.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low, slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny?
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things like the upcoming changes to renting are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. These changes will affect how you manage your tenancies. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting is changing.
Looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
He's speaking with a clinical psychologist, a forensic psychologist, I'm sorry, with more details on exactly what happened to that man in a moment. Quickly through the front pages of your newspapers. It is on the front page of a couple of papers. They don't lead with it, though. The biggest story for many is this idea of how they might rework, I stress the word might rework, the licence fee. The Daily Telegraph saying free TV licences for benefit claimants, and effectively is saying perhaps punchier for the Daily Mail, free BBC if you live on Benefit Street. We are looking at this in more detail and explain the idea seems to be borrowed from Germany, where a similar scheme, but unbelievably, if taken to its logical conclusion, those of us fortunate enough to be in employment would have to pay, almost like a streaming service, and they're saying you would play for repeats as well, programmes such as Fawlty Towers. That was made 50 years ago. Surely our licence fee, and goodness knows how many times it's been played, surely we've paid for that many times over, haven't we? Quickly to a couple of the other front pages. The front page of the Sun newspaper is a mum of 15 who was once dubbed Britain's benefits queen, has now launched her own business, and we wish her nothing but success on that. And for the Times, it is the return, and the Guardian, I'm sorry, the return of UK student exchange, the so-called Erasmus programme, which looks to be returning after some 5 years. The LBC app is the story you've just heard on the LBC News Bulletin. I think it led the bulletin, as I recall, Naveed Akram charged with 59 offences over that Bondi Beach attack. And let's go to another. Sky News is looking at the doctor's strike, giving all the reasons behind the strike. And indeed, it does chronicle the extraordinary amount of industrial action that's been taken by those resident doctors. We're on the picket line in a few moments' time. But let's get to Dr. Ruth Tully, who is a consultant forensic psychologist. And I start with a confession, Doctor. Sometimes I have got stuck in traffic, and I've got annoyed even, and I might even have banged the steering wheel and cursed a little bit. But the idea I would then take to the pavement or drive through a crowd is utterly alien to me. What happened here, Doctor? Good morning.
Good morning. I suppose we'll never truly know what happened inside someone's mind here, but factors that are associated with driving aggression in the research are things that are generally associated with violence, like a prior history of violence, which seems to be present in this case from what's reported in the press, general offending, impulsivity, narcissism, those sorts of things. So the difference between people who get angry in the car and don't act in an aggressive way, and those who do, might be some of those features that are just generally about their psychological and personality characteristics.
In sentencing, Judge Andrew Menery said, "We'll never know," and I quote, "we'll never know what was his state of mind." Can you give us an insight into what might have been his state of mind? You mentioned narcissism. Is it someone such as I should not be held up by these people? Is that the sort of thing we might be looking at?
Well, what's interesting in cases of extreme violence of any kind are really strong shoulds and musts, like that you just said, I shouldn't be held up by these people. And it's that sense of I'm more important, my needs are more important. And actually, in driving aggression, there is some suggestion in the literature and in some of the cases I've worked on that people genuinely feel in that moment that the other people on the road, whether they're road users or pedestrians, are deliberately impeding their goals. So whatever the goal is, to get to X, to get to Y, these people are trying to stop them, and that can contribute to really raised anger levels. And if they're not really able to control them, some people act on those in a harmful way.
So he drives, he injures around 130 men, women and children aged between 6 months and 77 years of age. The whole sequence takes about 7 minutes, including driving up to the area. And dash cam footage, which will not be released by the authority because of its gravity, shows him using foul language, which I can't use, obviously telling people to get out of his way. Doctor, there is an expression, please don't be offended, that people, quotes, lose their mind. Has he lost his mind here?
It's not a term that I would use. I think I might frame that more as he experienced really high levels of anger, and for whatever reason, he didn't have the skill or motivation to deal with that. And what he did was a choice. He made that choice. But what's interesting in this case is it's not the same as a one-punch decision. This was a persistent course of conduct, really, and he could see what he was doing. So it seems like in that moment, as a layperson, to use that term, he lost his mind. That might help us understand it, but in reality, he was able to control his actions and didn't.
Lastly, and I sense this past person was too far gone, and he has quite a checkered history of violence anyway, but for my normal listener who finds him or herself stuck on the M25 when they have to get to an important appointment or stuck on a road or whatever it might be, what are the tools that you can try and decrease the level of anger?
These would just be things that you might use in any anger situation. It's just reality checking. What's the reality of what's going on? These people aren't trying to impede your journey.
Yeah, but if you've got a plane to make and you're stuck on the M25 and that plane is taking you to a family wedding, and if you miss that plane, you're not going to get there, and there's no traffic moving, and what do you do then? How do you try and decrease the level of anger and rage?
Well, I don't think I have all of the answers to that for every person, but I think it's about accepting that some factors are inside of our control and some factors are outside of our control, and we can only manage ourselves in that situation.
Dr. Ruth Tully is a consultant forensic psychologist. Thank you for your input. 7:26. We'll come to your reactions on that in just a moment. It is a busy morning because, of course, we now have that doctor strike that has been going for some 26 minutes. And they are taking to picket lines up and down the country. LBC's Alex Taylor-Brown joins me from outside Leeds General Infirmary. Alex, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, I'm here on the picket line. The resident doctors aren't yet. They should be here in the next hour.
Oh, dear. Oh, there we go. That's me thinking I know what's going on a couple hundred miles up the road. Sorry, Alex, on you go.
They should be here in the next hour or so. That walkout obviously is underway. So resident doctors who are members of the British Medical Association walked out at around 7 o'clock this morning. Hospitals have been told to still aim to deliver 95% of usual activity during the strike action, as they also deal with, as we've heard, record flu cases. Patients are being urged to attend hospitals as usual, but health bosses are warning some appointments will inevitably need to be rescheduled. The director of West Yorkshire's Integrated Care Board, Dr. James Thomas, says the region's hospitals and mental health trusts will be significantly impacted, as will some GP practices. Those who have booked appointments are still being urged to attend as well. I've been down here early this morning outside LGI chatting to people to see what they make of the walkouts.
I think they deserve everything, but I think it's really bad timing. They've lost a little bit of my support this time with the flu epidemic and things like that. I've got somebody in critical care in there, and they're amazing. They've looked after us, we've been there all night. But there has to be a boundary, hasn't there? You know, I think if they'd have said, right, we won't do it now, let's get this flu epidemic on, we'll do it later, then I would have had more sympathy, I think.
Some people are concerned about the sort of timing, obviously, rising flu cases and winter pressures.
We have winter pressures every year. We always manage to get over the winter pressures. And, you know, this year's no different. We will survive the winter pressures. And the doctors do deserve to be heard. They really do.
As far as I'm concerned, we need to get them sorted out and we need to pay them the right amount of money now. It's gone on, what? I'm 62, so it's gone on for 62 years plus. It's about time they got justice, I'll be honest, because they do work hard. No, they deserve every penny they get. They do work hard.
Well, as we heard from one of those talkers there, Nick, it's all about the timing when it comes to this. 5 days of strike action coming just before Christmas. This concerns the doctors who are members of the BMA, and any hopes of a last-minute aversion were dashed on Monday when a fresh offer from the government was rejected. This walkout is over pay and jobs, with the BMA saying there aren't enough jobs for all those people qualifying and are calling for a 26% pay rise on top of the 29% that they've recently received from Labour. The union arguing that despite those pay rises, the residents' doctors' pay is still a fifth lower than it was in 2008, once inflation's taken into account. Now, Dr. Shivam Sharma spoke to you yesterday, Nick. They're the resident doctors' committee for the BMA, saying they completely disagree with claims that people will die as a result of this and that mortality rates don't increase during strike action. The government's accused the union of going on strike at a time that will inflict as much damage as they can on the NHS due to winter pressures. Recently, I spoke to the head of the Mid-Yorkshire NHS Trust, Brent Kilmurray. It told me they are prepared. Winter pressures happen every year. Yes, of course, industrial action doesn't help, but they should be able to get through this, and preparations are being made. One worker here this morning telling me, Nick, they didn't want to be recorded, but they said, you know what, we'll be fine because consultants can actually make decisions. This is the 14th walkout by resident doctors since 2023, and comes at a time what is often the most stressful time of the year for health workers.
Alex Taylor-Brown reporting for LBC outside Leeds General Infirmary, or the LGI. Interesting pickup on one of the first people with whom Alex spoke, the woman. It's about the timing. Remember, Wes Streeting, the health secretary, did say, I will extend your strike mandate. Let's get through this flu crisis. Have your strike in January. I'll give you till February to have your strike. Have your strike in January. Let's just get over that. This is what you're saying. I won't have time for your calls, but let's just do a couple of posts and texts that are coming in. Nathaniel, the doctors just want time off before Christmas so they can do their shopping and have a jolly time. If doctors were serious, they would man the picket lines outside hospitals, but they're missing in action. I mean, I have to say I was surprised when I crossed to my LBC colleague there that no one was on the line. Bernie in Kent, meanwhile, says, how can there be a safe time for the resident doctors to strike? No doubt they'll get what they want again. Resident doctors are not above other emergency services. If, God forbid, someone was to die due to this strike, who will the doctors blame, themselves or the government? Well, again, Bernie, many people would say that the fact that the government has given them a 29% pay rise, it was always going to come back to haunt them, that largesse, and that might be what's happening here. On the subject of money, coming up after the news...
A bigger-than-expected fall in inflation means the pressure's on the Bank of England tomorrow to cut interest rates for the last time this year. I'm Christian May from City AM, discussing this with Nick shortly.
And a BBC plan as to how they would rework the licence fee. But it would be free if you lived on Benefit Street, and you would have to pay if you're in fortune, have to be in employment. Would you stay faithful to the BBC? 7:31, you're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. The news headlines then from Thomas Watts.
Navid Akram has been charged with 59 offences, including 15 counts of murder, over the Bondi Beach terror attack. His father, Sajid, was killed by police at the scene of the shooting in Sydney on Sunday. Resident doctors in England are just beginning a 5-day strike in their row over jobs and pay. Officials say patients are likely to feel the impact of the action more than during previous walkouts as hospitals deal with rising flu cases. There was a sharper-than-expected fall in inflation in the year to November. The headline rate fell to 3.2%, down from 3.6% a month earlier. LBC weather, foggy and frosty for many this morning, then largely cloudy with showers and some heavy rain in the west, a high of 12 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
The inheritance tax now being applied to some smaller family farms. I still don't know they get just how damaging that policy is going to be for a lot of farms. For the quarter of farms that are going to be affected, that is game over. And the damage it is doing to families, I still don't think they quite get it.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
What makes the best roast dinner is deeply personal. And we've all got strong opinions on whether it's best with beef or chicken, roasties or mash, and if cauliflower cheese really belongs. It doesn't, by the way. But one thing isn't up for debate. A roast is always better with deliciously crispy, fluffy, Paxo stuffing. Mmm. A A roast isn't a roast without Paxo, the original stuffing, lovingly crafted since 1901.
At Fidelity, we've been helping our customers plan for their retirements for nearly 20 years. From understanding how much you'll need, to combining multiple pensions, we offer expert insights, excellent service, and even financial advice, so you can feel confidently invested in your future. For pensions, advice, or investment accounts, be invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Transferring is not right for everyone. Terms apply.
For people living with dementia, Christmas can be confusing, overwhelming, heartbreaking. Families are often left to cope alone. But you can help a family reimagine Christmas. Donate to Alzheimer's Society and you can help provide practical support, expert advice and crucial companionship this Christmas. It will take a society to beat dementia, and we can't do it without you. Search Alzheimer's Society and donate today.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
7:34, come to more of your reactions. It's the junior, I'm sorry, resident doctor strike that you want to talk about. I repeat, resident doctor strike, and we'll come to more of your reactions on that in just a moment. Actually, more support than I thought, because remember there was that plea to get us over this flu epidemic. But into the world of business, and the headline figure, UK inflation rate falls to 3.2%. But to get behind the headline, let's go to Christian May, editor-in-chief at City AM. Right, I've said the figure. What does it mean, Christian? Good morning.
Well, it means, Nick, that on this, my last outing in this slot for this year, before my Christmas break, I get to talk about a little bit of good news. Now, that's not something that we often indulge in, and it is good news. It's good news for consumers, it's good news for the Chancellor. The headline rate of inflation falling much more than economists had expected, from 3.6% to 3.2%. The consensus view was that it might fall down to 3.5%. Now, this has been driven by particular falls in food and drink, where food and drink inflation fell from 4.9 to 4.2. Alcohol and tobacco eased from just south of 6% to 4%. And in restaurants and hotels, it slipped from 3.8 to 3.5%. So what does it mean? Well, the first thing to consider is that this really does now lead into expectations that the Bank of England will tomorrow cut interest rates from 4% to perhaps 3.75%. Last time they met, they were very much divided. There was a casting vote by the governor. And this time round, I think people will take this inflation figure to heart. And most people now fully expect that interest rate reduction. There is something in this for everybody. If you're a little bit more sceptical or even cynical, you could say, well, look, we've had a lot of discounting, Black Friday deals and discounting here, there and everywhere throughout November. People saying, well, let's wait and see what happens in the new year. Let's wait and see what happens when regulated prices rise next April and all sorts of other tax changes kick in. Be that as it may, I think most people now are locking in this downward trajectory for inflation. Prices are still rising, but they're rising less than they were last month, and they're rising less than people thought they were.
Just doesn't feel like it in the supermarkets. I'm not questioning the figures for a moment. It's just when you go around the Sainsbury's or Waitrose or Asda, it just doesn't feel like it. All right, let's move on to a man who seems to be linked with just about every top job going, excluding the boss of Manchester United, George Osborne. What's he getting next?
You're right, he's been a busy boy since leaving the Treasury. He's held a number of roles, going back to editor of the Evening Standard, an advisor to the financial giant BlackRock. He's got his own podcast. He chairs the British Museum. He chairs the Northern Powerhouse, and he's been working as an investment banker. It's that last job that he is now leaving because he has decided that he wants to devote himself to what he calls the most exciting and interesting and important company in the world, OpenAI, the powerhouse behind much of our AI revolution. George Osborne has been hired by them. He's going to be a managing director and head of OpenAI for Countries, which is going to take him all over the world, I'm sure, trying to convince governments that OpenAI is the right way to help them try and run their administrations. It's a big job. It's a big deal. George Osborne put out a statement on social media yesterday, which had a rather unfortunate spelling mistake in it, but we won't dwell on that, in which he said that he's honoured and excited. And there you go. He's a busy guy. He's made, I have to say, and all credit to him, a fairly chunky amount of money. No details on quite what his remuneration package will be with OpenAI, but this is a company that's worth about $500 billion at present, so I'm sure he's negotiated successfully for his own salary there.
What's the latest in the tussle over Warner Brothers and Paramount?
Well, it would appear that Warner Brothers, who, of course, were lined up to be snapped up by Netflix until Paramount Skydance crashed the party and offered a great deal more for a different kind of takeover, it appears that Warner Brothers is going to urge its own shareholders to reject the Paramount intervention. The Paramount is insisting that its deal is superior in many ways to Netflix's proposition, but, well, first of all, Netflix would disagree, and it would appear that Warner Brothers Discovery is going to tell its shareholders that they also think that the Paramount deal is inadequate. They've got some concerns over the funding arrangements. Speaking of which, by the way, Affinity Partners, one of the big players in the proposed Paramount deal, has pulled out. That's the one that is run by President Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner. So that's going to change some of the political dynamics around that. Warner Brothers hasn't commented formally on this, but it looks as if they're not going to go quietly into the arms of Paramount. But we'll see what Warner Brothers shareholders have to say about it.
To the supermarket sector and Morrison's, they've not so much had their goose cooked, but their rotisserie chicken. What's the story behind that?
The story is it's a headline writer's dream, and foul play comes to mind. Yep. Rotisserie chickens, Nick. There was an extraordinary novel length judgment handed down yesterday. This all stems back to George Osborne, there he is again, and his introduction of, do you remember the pasty tax?
I remember it well.
Deeply controversial, extending VAT to hot takeaway items in 2012. Now, that policy was softened after an almighty backlash so that it would only apply to food sold above ambient temperature. So something that might have been cooked in a shop and then put on a shelf for you to take away and enjoy was to be spared the VAT raid. Now, Morrison's said that that should apply to its rotisserie chickens that should be exempt from VAT, and they were not charging VAT on those chickens. However, HMRC said, not so sure about that. We think this very much constitutes hot food, and as part of their evidence, they cited signs on these rotisserie chicken counters saying caution hot product. So they have ruled that VAT should have been applied to them, and that's going to cost Morrison's about £17 million.
That's no chicken feed.
No, it's not chicken feed, backdated VAT payments, and of course it will now apply to other retailers and supermarkets of this particular product.
There's so many gags I want to do about cluck and clucking, but I kind of value my job here. So I'll finish by moving to a sector that always fascinates me. It's the media. And do we have a new owner of the Daily Telegraph Group?
Well, nearly. We're certainly one step closer to it. Lord Rothermere's DMGT, the owner of the Daily Mail, and indeed the Mail on Sunday, and the Metro, and the I newspaper, and the New Scientist, very much wants to bring Daily Telegraph into its orbit for about £500 million. There's some technical arrangements that we'll have to go through in order to secure that. Redbird IMI, which took control of the Telegraph titles back in 2023, has formally now told the government that it wants to relinquish its right to buy the papers outright to Lord Rothermere's DMGT. Lisa Nandy, the Culture Secretary, will therefore inform Parliament that she's received that request, and she will have to decide whether she wants to trigger a Competition and Markets Authority investigation to look at plurality issues and competition issues in the media. Analysts expect that there probably will be a stage one investigation that looks into this, but not the more contentious and problematic stage two investigation that would then perhaps seek remedies, perhaps selling off other parts of the media group. People don't expect that to happen. There is an expectation that this will go over the line.
I won't talk to you again then before Christmas or this year, so I'm going to wish you a happy Christmas. Thanks for all your help through the year, and I'll catch up, of course, with you in the new year. Christian May, Editor-in-Chief at City AM, taking us to 7.42. Let's get to other stories. I will come to your reaction on the junior doctor strike, I promise you, in a moment. But to the world of politics, and voters across the country go to the polls next year. Key local elections across Wales and Scotland, and also crucial votes in England, including in London, where every councillor is up for election. And that includes Westminster City Council, with the spotlight on the relatively new Labour administration, which now runs that authority. But they've been accused of reckless waste, as LBC can reveal the millions of pounds given to a now collapsed building firm, as well as the sheer number of highly paid executives. OBC's Henry Riley has the full details. Henry, morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, a huge spotlight, as you say, on local authorities, particularly in the capital, with those all-out elections taking place next year. As you say, in simple terms, every councillor is up for re-election. And we can reveal that Westminster City Council spent over £27 million after ignoring concerns about a building firm that went bust. The spotlight now very much on the council's leader, Adam Hugg. Now, it was just months after Labour gained control of the council for the first time back in 2022 that the construction firm Geoffrey Osborne Limited were awarded a series of lucrative contracts in order to build 64 affordable homes. Now, there was also a clear warning at the time that they had a poor performance and that there were bankruptcy risks associated. Earlier that same year, an internal memo was circulated detailing the extent of the firm's financial woes and that the firm was at risk of ultimate supplier failure. They'd lost nearly £14 million in the 18 months leading to September 2020. Paul Fisher was elected as a Labour councillor before defecting to the Conservatives on Westminster and told us that taxpayers should have been better protected.
That reckless decision, in my opinion, was taken because cabinet members weren't willing to push back on the advice that they were being given by officers. As councillors, it's our job to interrogate advice that we receive, and that's even more important when you're in the position of a cabinet member with responsibility for millions of pounds worth of public works contracts. And unfortunately, in this scenario, there was clearly a failure to push back on that advice so as to protect taxpayer money.
Now, Geoffrey Osborne Limited filed for administration in April 2024. The council then had to allocate an additional £22 million to another contractor. That was not put out for competitive tender. The authority also earmarked £5.6 million for remedy work that was carried out by the firm. Joanna Marchong from the Adam Smith Institute told us that it reeks of mismanagement.
Construction and housing in the borough in itself in Westminster is a mess. You walk around and you do see loads of people out homeless. It takes 100 years on a waiting list to gain access to a house. So from waiting list to access to social housing, it takes 100 years. Council itself not doing their background research properly or failing to even act on research already done. It's careless and it reeks of mismanagement.
So a lot of spotlight on that. Also, there are the salaries, Nick. We can reveal 92 members of staff at Westminster City Council earn over £100,000 a year. 92 earn over £100,000 a year. That's more than twice the number just 4 years ago. In response to the pay, the council said it reflects the skills needed and that they recruit the best talents for managing within a complex organisation and that the only reason there are that many over £100,000
is because it's a
gradual annual pay increases. And then lastly, Nick, in response to the building contractor story, Westminster say that lessons have been learned, but say the entire building industry faced significant challenges during the pandemic. There's a robust procedure in place before awarding this contract. They'd worked with the firm before and that they will now look for earlier warning signs.
Can I suggest it might be a good idea to keep a close eye on Westminster Council over the coming months?
We will be keeping an eye.
Henry Riley, LBC's Henry Riley reporting. All right, coming up, we'll get to more of your reactions on the resident doctor's strike. And in the next hour, the free BBC if you live on Benefit Street. So you'd have to pay for this. Which, if it was the grand final, you could probably understand. But you'd still have to pay for this. After more than 50 years, surely there's something faulty over that scheme. 7:46 LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
A 24-year-old man's been charged with murder and terrorism over the Bondi Beach attack. Thousands of resident doctors in England are beginning their 5-day strike. And the UK's inflation rate fell to 3.2% in November. LBC weather, foggy and frosty this morning, then largely cloudy with showers. A high of 12 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. It's slow on the M11 southbound. It's partly blocked at junction 7 for Harlow because of an accident. It's also slow on the M4 going into town. There's one lane closed. The car's having a tyre change between the M25 and junction 4 for Heathrow. The Blackwall Tunnel northbound is closed. The car has broken down, so there are queues from the Woolwich Road flyover. There are also queues in Cranford. The A4 Bath Road westbound stays blocked. That's because of an accident between Barclay Avenue and Way Avenue. There's no service on the Woolwich Ferry. That's because of the fog. The fog also means there's disruption to flights at London City Airport. On the Tube, there's no service on the Bakerloo line between Queen's Park and Harrow and Wealdstone. And on London Overground, there are severe delays on the entire Miles May line after a train was delayed earlier.
This is LBC.
It's the last chance to get yourself a ticket for tonight's Lotto draw.
It could be you.
Lotto, from the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
Gift more for less when you shop at the O2 this Christmas. Save up to 70% off RRP on over 60 of their favourite designer brands, including Nike, Tommy Hilfiger, Le Creuset, The Cosmetics Company Store and Lindt. Ticked everyone off your list. Start the festivities at one of our 30 bars and restaurants. Enjoy a movie or get competitive with bowling, climbing, interactive football, indoor skydiving and more. Find us at North Greenwich, just 15 minutes from central London. Search outlet shopping at the O2 to start planning your visit.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Serious about the right vitamins for you and your family? Trust Vitabiotics, the UK's number one vitamin company, for expert nutritional care for every age and lifestyle. Vitamins for everyone, including well man, well woman, well baby and well kid. From Boots, pharmacies and Vitabiotics.com. For number one verification, see Vitabiotics.com.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny.
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things like the upcoming changes to renting are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. These changes will affect how you manage your tenancies. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
Looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
10 minutes before eight now. It was earlier this week that we learnt, unfortunately, unemployment had ticked up a little bit, 5.1%. So news that jobs could be protected at Grangemouth obviously is positive news. And let's turn to the Labour MP and Energy Minister, Michael Shanks, with more detail. Just remind listeners, good to have you on, Minister. Just remind listeners what they make at Grangemouth and how many jobs we might be looking at there. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Good to be with you. So today what we're announcing is a funding package to support jobs, 500 jobs at Grangemouth. Grangemouth, of course, has been in the news because of the refinery recently, but what it also has is a vast chemicals complex at Grangemouth, which produces some of the most important chemicals in the country. And of course, we published in an industrial strategy our commitment to the chemicals industry. This is our commitment now to those workers at Grangemouth, skilled workers who are doing an essential job producing a number of things that are critical in our economy. And this funding today, £120 million funding package from the UK government, protects those 500 jobs at Grangemouth.
It's the briefing note tells me, Minister, it's an ethylene plant, if I'm saying that correctly. What does that make? Does that make plastics ultimately? Is that right?
Yeah, ethylene's a really key component of plastic, and of course it goes from Grangemouth right across the country into a number of other industries. Without it, we have some quite significant issues right across the economy, and so this is a really important plant for us to protect. But what it also is a collection of some of the best skilled, experienced workers in the country, and we want to retain those workers at Grangemouth. This funding protects those workers, but what we're also doing is putting funding in for the wider Grangemouth site to diversify and to build new industries for the future there as well.
And for clarification, it's not the Grangemouth oil refinery. These are separate enterprises.
Yeah, they're separate businesses. The refinery, unfortunately, when we came into government, was already earmarked for closure. There wasn't a plan from the previous government, but we have committed £200 million from the National Wealth Fund to build new industries on that site. And I was in Grangemouth just last week to announce the first of those businesses, MyAlgae, that's setting up there. This is separate funding for the chemical plant, which is the vast industrial complex next to it at Grangemouth. This protects the jobs there.
And let's talk a little bit about the sums, if I've got, again, the briefing note correct. The government is looking to invest £120 million and INEOS, the owners, £30 million. Over how long a period is this?
So there'll be funding going in immediately as part of a grant from the UK government, and then there'll also be a loan guarantee as part of that funding as well. That's to allow the investment to continue into the chemicals plant, but it's also to make sure that there's long-term line of certainty for the plant, and INEOS itself is putting money in to invest in the chemical plant as well. So it's a combination of the owner, the shareholder, and the government backing this, but as part of a broader strategy through the industrial strategy to make sure the chemical industry is as on as strong a footing as possible for the future. And as I say, we're also investing in diversifying the industry at Grangemouth, so there are other economic opportunities there alongside the work that INEOS does.
You mentioned INEOS. It was the chairman, Sir Jim Ratcliffe, who earlier this year, I think it was, yes, it was in January, said that he feared the chemical industry was coming to an end due to high energy costs and carbon taxation. What's changed his viewpoint, do you imagine, Minister?
Well, I'm not sure on his viewpoint now. You'd have to ask him. But what I would say is we've engaged with them in good faith on this proposal because Grangemouth is critical for our national infrastructure. And we've engaged and come to a deal with Sir Jim Ratcliffe on this question. There are broader questions, of course, which we're working on right across the economy about how we reduce energy bills. That's important for your listeners in terms of domestic energy bills. But it's also really important for industry that we bring down those bills. And all the action that the Chancellor announced in the budget will help us do that. But we also know there's much, much more to do as well. And that's why the work that the department that I am privileged to be a minister in is about bringing down bills for everyone in the long run.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that because some figures have come out this morning. You'll be aware of them, I'm sure. The inflation figures dropped now from 3.6 to 3.2% in the year to November. I'll comment on that if you would, Minister.
Well, I think it's obviously hugely welcome. Inflation is a critical enabler of people being able to spend more money in the economy and have more money in their pockets. So it's obviously really welcome news and a vindication of some of the action that we've been taking in government. But it's also a reminder, of course, that we need to do more and we need to go further, and particularly on energy costs. The announcement in the budget by the Chancellor of taking £150 off bills is really important. But we know that we need to do more. And that's why everything we're focused on as a government is driving forward the change that gets rid of the volatility of fossil fuels, brings down bills for everyone. So it's welcome news. Of course it is. A bit more money in people's pockets. Prices rising more slowly than people anticipated. But much more work to do.
Yes, I mean, you mentioned money in people's pockets. How's that promise of our energy bills coming down by £300 by 2030 going? Seems to be going the other way at the moment, Minister.
Well, I don't think that's quite right. If you compare the average of the price cap in 2025 to 2024, it's actually slightly lower, but we know there's much more that we need to do.
Ofgem, you'll be aware, said there could be a net energy bill rise of about £30 a year.
Well, the combination of investment that we need to make in the transmission infrastructure involves an investment into the future, but at the same time brings down bills. So every wind farm we switch
but
on, every
bills
solar
aren't
panel
down,
we switch
Minister,
on...
are they? Well, the reality, you know that as well as I do.
Well, I think we need to wait for the next price cap figure to know if that's the case or not. Yes, there's costs been going on to bills because it's really critical that we invest in infrastructure. That's the only way we bring down bills and protect households and businesses in the long run. It does take some investment, but we also know that if we squeeze gas off as the price setter, we'll bring down bills for everyone.
So we can look at the next price cap starting to reflect the savings you and your colleagues hope to make, to clarify?
What we always said with the £300 off bills, which we stand by and we're absolutely committed to delivering, is that it will be delivered in a parliament. We never said we'd be able to do this immediately. Of course, I would love as an energy minister for us to be able to bring down bills immediately, but the truth is we've got some long-term work that we have to do to make sure that gas isn't setting the price. That can't happen overnight. It requires investment, it requires infrastructure. We're doing all of that and it will bring down bills, but it will take a bit of time. And I recognise your listeners want to have more money in their pockets and less being spent on bills right now. That's why everything we're doing as a government is driving forward action to bring down bills.
And obviously the inflation figures are good news, but you'll be aware the unemployment figures came out earlier this week and showed a slight ticking up, 5.1%. And the ONS reporting 150,000 jobs have been lost since October of last year, 38,000 in last month, November alone, the highest single monthly loss of jobs since COVID. Why? You're meant to be a Labour government. People have been turfed out of work, Minister.
Well, of course, any job losses for anyone that has lost their job are hugely disappointing. But we have also created many jobs, and industries created many jobs over that period. So the employment figure is also increasing, which is important to look at. But of course, there's much more we have to do. And today's announcement is a good example of why we're so determined as a government to have an industrial policy that delivers jobs in the UK. There's thousands of jobs already been created in the energy industry by bringing manufacturing and infrastructure building here to this country instead of importing from elsewhere.
You're ignoring that, Minister. 38,000 lost last month. I take you back to COVID when the figures were that bad.
Well, I'm not ignoring it at all. Of course, unemployment figures are important, but so too is looking at new jobs that are being created, and all the work we're doing through the skills work, for example, is to make sure people are ready to move into those new jobs. Both of those things are important. We want to build an economy fit for the future and make sure those jobs are able for people to move into as quickly as possible. And in the energy jobs, for example, we've outlined a plan for 800,000 more jobs in clean energy by 2030, and we're moving forward with delivering those.
OK, finally, and again talking about money in people's pockets, would you be in favour of an idea being mooted, I understand, by the government to put certain BBC programmes behind a paywall, possibly introduce advertising, while their services would remain free if you were in the receipt of benefits? Would you support that?
Well, it's a consultation that's open.
Yes,
it's
I know not, that, sir. It's not, but would you support it?
Well, it's a consultation for people to contribute to. I haven't looked at
it. Do you support it?
I don't have a view right now. I haven't looked at the consultation.
You don't have a view?
So what I would say is these are proposals.
So it's the front page of three of this morning's national newspapers, and you don't have a view?
It's a consultation. It's for the public to suggest their views. I'd like to hear what the public have to say on it. But what I would say is, what's really important is, despite the fact you were playing Fawlty Towers earlier on, which I didn't realise I've actually never watched, I didn't know the theme song, it's before my time.
My goodness, you have such a rich Christmas ahead of you, I promise you, Minister.
But, you know, there's some great products being produced, programmes being produced over the decades by the BBC. It has to live within its means, and this consultation is about how they fund it into the future.
Once you've done that, you want to try Dad's Army too. Michael, you'll every minute of it. Thank you for your time. Good luck. 500 jobs to be saved up at Grangeworth, as explained by Energy Minister Michael Shanks, appearing here on LBC. And the music means we must move on. And back to that story. The idea that the BBC could be put behind a paywall for some, but shows such as...
Who do you think you are kidding, Mr. Hitler, if you think we're on the run?
Well, the people who pay the bills might be on the run, and who do they think they're kidding? We'll look at that in more detail. Plus, the Masons fight back after those comments from Met Police Commissioner Sir Mark Rowley about officers having to declare that they are a member of that organisation. And if you were hoping for a driving test, I'm afraid it's a long time before you can get into gear. Try nearly 2 years, the backlog extended until November 2027. Those stories and more follow the 8 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock, a five-day walkout by resident doctors in England is getting underway. Health leaders say this strike will be more challenging due to the onset of winter pressures and rising flu. LBC's Alex Taylor-Brown is at Leeds General Infirmary.
Patients are being urged to attend hospitals as usual, but health bosses are warning some appointments will inevitably need to be rescheduled. This concerns the doctors who are members of the BMA, and any hopes of a last-minute aversion were dashed on Monday when a fresh offer from the government was rejected. This walkout is over pay and jobs, with the BMA saying there aren't enough jobs for all those people qualifying and are calling for a 26% pay rise on top of the 29% that they've recently received.
The surviving suspect in the Bondi Beach attack has been charged with 59 offences, including terrorism and murder. Navid Akram is accused of opening fire at a Hanukkah celebration, killing 15 Jewish people. Nicole Johnston, who is in Sydney, says Akram woke from a coma yesterday.
He is in hospital. The police are not releasing a great deal of information, of course, other than to say that eventually, at a later date, he will be transferred to a correctional facility. The police have also said that there would be some type of hearing in the hospital this afternoon.
The first funerals for the victims have taken place, including for British-born Rabbi Eli Schlanger. The son of the Hollywood director, Rob Reiner, has been charged with two counts of murder. Nick Reiner, who is 32, is accused of killing his parents at their home in Los Angeles. They were found on Sunday. The rate of inflation fell by more than expected to 3.2% in the year to November. That's a 10-month low and down from 3.6% in October. The Energy Minister, Michael Shanks, has told Nick it is welcome news.
It's also a reminder, of course, that we need to do more and we need to go further, and particularly on energy costs. The announcement in the budget by the Chancellor of taking £150 off bills is really important, but we know that we need to do more.
About 500 jobs have been secured at Britain's biggest chemical plant. The government will provide about £120 million to keep the INEOS facility at Grangemouth operating. It's considered strategically important for national infrastructure. In the city, the FTSE 100 is reopening at 96.84. It closed down 66 yesterday. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 14. LBC weather, frosty and quite foggy in places, then largely cloudy with showers and heavier rain in the west. A high of 12 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
This Christmas at Tesco, 24 cans of Pepsi Max are just £6.75. That's down from £11.50 with your Tesco Club card. Finding great prices, that's what makes it Christmas. Tesco, every little helps. Majority of larger stores excludes Northern Ireland. Ends 31st of December. Club card or app required.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 3 minutes after eight on Wednesday, December the 17th, having it easy on Benefit Street. The idea that the BBC will charge for watching even some shows that were made for more than 50 years ago, unless you're in receipt of benefits. We'll look at that in more detail and, of course, gauge your reactions. You heard from the government minister, it's, quotes, going out to consultation, and they say they'll be informed by public reaction. Let's hear what we hear from you. Plus, paying the cost for comments about the Freemasons. Commissioner of the Met, Sir Mark Rowley, spoke with me on Friday, last week, about the decision to force his officers to declare if they're part of the organisation.
I'm not uncomfortable about Mason serving. I'm uncomfortable about the degree of secrecy. If we bring sunlight to it, then that avoids any conflict of interest for individuals, doesn't it, by people having to declare it.
The Met have said they will be taking legal action, and you'll be hearing from a senior member of the organisation later in this hour. To mums to be or mums, caesareans are more popular than natural births for the first time ever. Anna David is a professor in obstetrics and maternal fetal medicine at the University College in London.
It's really important to realise that caesarean sections are very safe, and if you have to have a caesarean section, they're absolutely critical. They save your baby's life, they save your lives.
Plus, in the field of employment, to call a colleague, quotes, disorganised, is harassment, says a tribunal judge. Clearly, they've never worked with one of the team here.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
As we come towards the end of the year, you start thinking about how you put year-enders together, whether it's for the radio, whether it's for newspapers or television. And I think we probably had what I want to call those water cooler moments with, credit to them, a tremendous programme made by the BBC. Tremendous show, but get ready to have to pay for that, and even some shows dating back to the days of Fawlty Towers, if these plans come about. The story essentially is benefit claimants and students are in line for free BBC licences, while Gavin and Stacey, Fawlty Towers and shows such as Strictly Come Dancing and Traitors would be put behind what's called a paywall. Now, these proposals form part of the BBC's charter review launched yesterday, with Culture Secretary Lisa Nandy looking at options on the future of the TV licence. Ministers are considering expanding free licences to households struggling to pay the cost. It's, by the way, £174.50. The consultation says, in Germany, and I did mention earlier they'd looked elsewhere, concession, and I quote, concessions are available to individuals who receive social benefits and to some students and people undertaking vocational training, close quotes. We'll be hearing from a former director of BBC Television in just a moment. But first, Adam Sherwin, arts and media correspondent for The Eye, who has covered this story in his paper, has a piece in this morning. Just give a little bit more detail that you can now, and indeed what the process means. What happens next, Adam? Morning to you.
Morning. Yes. So the government said to the BBC, look, you've lost about 2 million licence fee payers over the past 5 years. You need to get more money in somehow if you want to carry on doing what you're doing. So let's have a look at some really radical proposals to get some more commercial income in, or to decide how we can best change the licence fee, which they say is outdated. So amongst those ideas are advertising. Could you have your programmes interrupted on the BBC by advertising? Could the BBC operate a bit more like a Netflix streaming subscription service and have some of its more popular programmes like Traitors or strictly going behind a paywall? And is there other ways of making the license fee fairer for people by giving some groups of people perhaps discounted or even free licenses, as you've mentioned, students and people on benefits?
And that's what attracted many of the headlines. What's the timeline? What happens now with the consultation, and by when do they have to have a new metric or new way of payment in place?
So what they're saying is that they're going to have 12 weeks of consultation so the public can write in and tell the government and the BBC what they think of these proposals. Then there'll be another stage in this process. There'll be lots of negotiations with the BBC and other interested parties, including commercial stations and rivals. And then there'll be what's called a white paper, and then the proposals will go to Parliament. But none of this can be in place before 2028, when the previous BBC charter ends. A new BBC charter for the next decade or so will bring in a new funding arrangement, if that's in fact what the government chooses to do.
How much gnashing of teeth will there have been in the corridors of power of the BBC when yesterday they sought to talk about the licence fee, and in fact they found themselves talking about President Trump and Panorama?
Yeah, the timing couldn't be worse, because they're preparing for a battle for the very soul of the BBC with the government, but they could actually be bankrupted if Donald Trump somehow manages to win this $10 billion worth of lawsuits. So, and there's a real debate at the top of the BBC about how to respond. They believe the lawsuit is meritless, that nobody watched this Panorama programme in Florida, that there was no malice intended, and they would win in the courts. But how much money, how much licence fee money do you want to spend dragging this case through the American courts, through Florida? Is it better to settle? But if you settle, a lot of people will say, I don't want a penny of my license fee money going to pay Donald Trump. They really have to think about this very carefully.
Adam, you've been an arts and media correspondent. You're at the Eye now, but you've been around the industry for many, many years. I've known you for many years. The TV license, as you and I both know it, it's over, isn't it? Come the next review. It will not operate as it currently does, surely.
We always think that every time there's a license-free review and the charter comes around, and you end up coming back to something quite similar, because nobody's really come up with a way to crack this and find a way that's fairer. The problem now is younger people are not watching the BBC. They're not willing to pay for the license fee. And I think that's why particularly the student idea might be the one that comes through here, because if the BBC can give some free license fees to students when they stop being students, they can say, aha, now we've got your names, addresses, you signed up to watch the BBC, now will you start paying for us, please.
Adam Sherwin has coverage, more coverage in The Eye, where he's the arts and media correspondent. Thanks for your input. 9 minutes after eight. Let's talk about newspapers. And in the Daily Telegraph, there's a big piece, powerful piece, by Danny Cohen. Mr. Cohen is former director of BBC Television, now president of Access Entertainment. The headline on Mr. Cohen's piece reads, "The BBC should merge with C4, as in Channel 4, for survival." Danny Cohen joins me now. What's the thinking behind that, Danny? Morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, the radical thinking is needed now in the broadcasting landscape in the UK. And the reason for that is the world has changed so much since the last charter renewal. We live now in an age of global giant tech platforms. They have endless amounts of money. They can distribute their content anywhere in the world, and we all have it in our living rooms. And by that, I mean not just Netflix and Amazon, Apple, but YouTube, which has become, you know, a huge, huge source of viewing, particularly amongst younger people. So my view is that the British industry needs a lot more scale if it's going to compete in the world of these global entertainment platforms. Interestingly, Sky have begun discussions with ITV.
Yep.
I think that's really interesting and will provide more scale. And I believe some courageous thinking is needed now, and a merger between the BBC and Channel 4 would have a lot of mutual benefits. For the BBC, it would deliver more of those young audiences that Adam Wright refers to are watching the BBC less and less. And Channel 4 is looking like a smaller and smaller island in this kind of global ocean of entertainment. It needs more scale. It needs more stability. And I think bringing together those two public service broadcasters could create a platform which would really have a better chance of surviving in this age.
The concluding paragraph of your article is something Adam was touching on, actually. You write, "In the age of giants, which you've just talked about, muddling through as we are is the most dangerous option of all." Do you think secretly the BBC is aware of that, Danny?
I don't know. I think it's very hard for people to give up the old models of doing things. And I think in an age like this, which is transforming so fast, you have to be a courageous leader, you have to be a radical thinker, and you have to be prepared to, you know, consider things which may have seemed unthinkable even 10 years ago. But we all know how much we changed in the world in terms of what we watch and how we watch it. And just pretending we can go on as we were, with, you know, four or five channels and everyone sitting with their remote control switching between them, we've left that behind. But the British broadcasting system is still reliant on that old model. And I think it needs to scale up. We need mergers. The other interesting thing on that, Nick, is, you know, you'll have followed this bidding war for Warner Brothers between Paramount and Netflix. You know, Paramount is a huge Hollywood studio. It wants to buy Warner Brothers because in itself it wasn't big enough. So if a huge Hollywood studio doesn't feel big enough to survive and wants to spend, you know, over $100 billion merging, successful or not, whether they'll be in that bid, you can see that others in the entertainment world now understand that scale now is massively, massively important.
Danny, thanks for your time as ever. Danny Cohen, you were director of BBC Television. You're now president of Access Entertainment. Let's get to some of your calls at 12 minutes after 8. Kamala is in Sheen. Kamala, your reaction to what could be coming our way at the next TV licence review. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I love your show. I have been listening 14 years your show. This is the second time talking to you.
Good. You can't ring me once every 7 years, for God's sake. I can't wait that long, Kamala. You're going to have to lift that up a little bit. Come on now.
Yeah. You know, I do not agree with removing TV license for benefit people.
No, nor do I. Ridiculous.
Yeah, because most of the benefit people are working on cash in hand. Mm. I know lots of friends and family, they are working in cash in hand and getting benefit. First, the benefit system should be reviewed before removing the fee. As a taxpayer, we are on debt. We are paying lots of tax on direct debits, as we can't afford to pay tax.
Yep.
Therefore, first, I believe the tax system should be removed or reviewed before giving more privilege and things to them.
It does seem to add to what we learned from the last month's budget that those of us who are fortunate enough to be in work are having to work ever harder to provide benefits, and in this instance it might be free TV, for those who choose... And in some instances, they choose not to work. In others, they can't work, but in many, they choose not to work. Kamala.
Yeah, that's true, because they don't like to work because they say it's the benefit system is giving their housing benefits and everything. But why they need to work hard to work hard?
Let me ask you this, lastly. If you watch the BBC and you're watching EastEnders or Traitors or Strictly Come Dancing, would it break your heart if Morrison's or Maxwell House or British Airways were to place an advert in the middle of it? Would that worry you that much?
Not really, but I just always worrying about our system is, abused. That is my most worry.
All right. Thanks. Good to hear from you again. Twice in 14 years. My goodness, Carl will be sure to ring me again. Now, over. That's the other way. Instead of, this is a ludicrous idea, that those of us who are fortunate enough to be in employment will now pay for the TV licences for those. Some of people have no choice, but let's be honest, we have a benefit bill that will hit £378 billion by 2029. To put that in context, that's enough to run the NHS almost for 2 years. And that's the benefits bill. Now, some of that is old age pension, I understand, but there's a lot of people. Why the hell are we paying for TV licences for some people who choose not to go to work? And, just as importantly, would it really break your heart if there was a Marks and Spencer's advert in the middle of Strictly Come Dancing? Would it really matter that much? We'll take your views on that. And the Masons fight back. Do you remember this on Friday? Commissioner of the Metropolitan Police, Sir Mark Rowley, explaining why his force is to ask officers to declare any links to Freemasonry.
Any society which has a hierarchy, a degree of secrecy and an expectation of sort of loyalty to each other, there's a concern, I think, widespread that that may lead to not acting without fear or favour.
And now the Masons say, I'll sue you in court. More on that after this. 8.15 LBC News headlines, Thomas Watts.
Resident doctors in England are just beginning a five-day strike in their row over jobs and pay. Navid Akram has been charged with 59 offences, including 15 counts of murder over the Bondi Beach terror attack. And there was a sharper-than-expected fall in inflation in the year to November. LBC weather, quite foggy out there and frosty in places, largely cloudy with showers and heavier rain in the west, a high of 12 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. It's slow on the M11 southbound. It's partly blocked because of an accident at Junction 7 for Harlow. There are queues in Cranford. The A4 Bath Road westbound is blocked between Barclay Avenue and Way Avenue because of an accident. It's slow in Camberwell. Camberwell Church Street is partly blocked in both directions between Ben Hill Road and Datchler Place after a fire in a building. There are queues to the Blackwall Tunnel northbound from the Sun in the Sands. That's after a car broke down earlier. There's no service on the Woolwich Ferry because of the fog. There's also disruption affecting flights at London City Airport because of the fog. On the Tube, there's no service on the Bakerloo line between Queen's Park and Harrow and Wealdstone, and minor delays on the rest of the line. And on London Overground, there are severe delays on the entire Miles May line.
This is LBC. Listen on the move with the new LBC app.
This Christmas at Tesco, 24 cans of Pepsi Max are just £6.75. That's down from £11.50 with your Tesco club card. Finding great prices, that's what makes it Christmas. Tesco, every little helps. Majority of large stores excludes Northern Ireland. Ends 31st of December. Club card or app required.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
What makes the best roast dinner is deeply personal. And we've all got strong opinions on whether it's best with beef or chicken, roasties or mash, and if cauliflower cheese really belongs. It doesn't, by the way. But one thing isn't up for debate. A roast is always better with deliciously crispy, fluffy Paxo stuffing. Mmm. A roast isn't a roast without Paxo, the original stuffing, lovingly crafted since 1901.
At ulisprosperity.com, you buy the car and we pay you up to £600 per month in rental income. For conditions, visit ulisprosperity.com.
There's an old Thai saying that roughly translates as, the family who takes the internet on holiday can locate a less crowded beach. Particularly handy, my friend, if it's peak mating season for nippy little crabs. Pack the internet with an eSIM from Airalo. That's A-I-R-A-L-O. Ow.
Ow. Make this Christmas a jingle belter from well-niced appetizers like Aldi's Himalayan salt-aged smoked salmon to proper naughty desserts, such as their melting milk chocolate baubles with caramel sauce. Your table spread will totally slay. Go all fancy with Aldi. Specially selected.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Let's pick up what you're saying about the idea of paying for the licence fee, only, of course, if you're in employment. This comes in from Gary Cook. My benefits go up, my wages don't. Why the hell should I pay for job dodgers to get free TV licences? It's madness, and it gives them another reason to stay on benefits. Dino in Sheffield says, adverts in the middle of Strictly might actually make it interesting to watch. This comes in from Jim in Tenterden. Keep people on benefits, keep them down there, keep them voting Labour. That's the real agenda here. Meanwhile, Gordon in Edinburgh says the licence fee needs to be reformed, but the BBC needs to look at efficiencies. There's no need for it to be so bloated. We don't need BBC Radio 3. That can merge with 4 and 5 and get rid of 6 music. The news production is bloated with multiple correspondents being sent to the same story for different parts. Even when they cover a sporting event like Wimbledon, there's an army of people there. Private industry would do this in a much more efficient way. Well, I'd like to point you to Sky TV and Sky Sports, which, of course, is not publicly owned, privately owned, and the coverage that they manage to do of all sorts of events, not just football, but they do the golf and everything else. And as always, and it amuses one of my colleagues, I do think it's important to take you to the TV listings. And this is what we're all paying £174.50 for as regards the TV offering of the BBC. What time of the morning is it? OK, so we're coming close to getting to Animal Park Christmas Special, which is a repeat. That'll take us into Homes Under the Hammer, which is a repeat. Then Bargain Hunt Christmas Special from Nottinghamshire, which is a repeat. BBC News, no, they are going to make that show. Father Brown, a body is identified as a woman who went missing. That is a repeat. Escape to the Country, Nikki Chapman helps someone buy a house in Shropshire, which is a repeat. Oh, The Bidding Room. Here we go, The Bidding. My God, even Celebrity Pointless is a repeat now. What's that all about? I thought that was... What's Sander up to? Why is he repeating it? I'll have to walk down the corridor. Pointless Celebrities, that's a repeat, and then you're into the news. That's one. BBC Two, here we go. They have Bargain Hunt as well. Repeat. Sign Zone, Celebrity Antiques Road Trip. Repeat. Impossible, I don't even know what that is. Repeat. Brain Box Challenge. Repeat. Life in the Snow. Repeat. Funeral in Berlin. That was made, I think, when I was born. That was made in the 60s. They're not seriously going to charge us to watch a film made in 1960, something or other. Then Nigel Slater's Simple Cooking. He'll Turn the Spotlight on Surf and Turf, a repeat. Flog It, a repeat. Richard Osman's Festive House of Games, a repeat. and they want to charge. That is extraordinary, isn't it? We'll return to more of your calls on that in just a moment. But whenever we can here on the Nick Ferrari Show on LBC, we don't just cover the news, we try to make the news. And it appears we have again with an interview from last week. My exchange with Commissioner of the Met, Sir Mark Rowley. He was here taking your calls on Friday, but we got on to the force's decision to make officers to declare if they have any links with Freemasonry.
We consulted over the summer. It's noteworthy that two-thirds of our officers think it ought to be declarable, which goes to the level of concern that any society which has a hierarchy, a degree of secrecy and an expectation of sort of loyalty to each other, there's a concern, I think, widespread that may lead to not acting without fear or favour. I'm sure that that many Masons do great charity work and it's not a threat, but we need to do everything possible to protect the integrity of the organisation.
You're uncomfortable about Masons serving under you?
I'm not uncomfortable about Masons serving. I'm uncomfortable about the degree of secrecy. If we bring sunlight to it, then that avoids any conflict of interest for individuals, doesn't it, by people having to declare it.
The Masons are saying it's, quote, unlawful, disproportionate, unfair and discriminatory.
They can say that. I disagree. If you look back in history, you'll see so many reports questioning Freemasonry and the police. We have a hard recommendation made like 5 years ago by Nuala alone in relation to a very sensitive inquiry from history. We've looked at the intelligence picture we have today, and the combination of factors, I'm satisfied this is absolutely necessary. And the fact the majority of the good men and women in the Met are very clear this ought to be declarable, that they think undermines their trust in the organisation, that's important. There are many, many women officers in the organisation particularly who are massively relieved at this decision, okay, because they feel they are disadvantaged by sadly, a boys' club.
Have you ever been invited to become a Freemason?
No.
You have no interest in either?
I've got no interest in it whatsoever.
The O'Lone case, of course, to which the Commissioner referred, was the murder of the private detective Daniel Morgan down in South London many years ago. So the Freemasons have decided to take action. Let's get more on that now from Adrian Marsh, who's Grand Secretary of the Freemasons, United Grand Lodge of England. Thank you for coming on, Secretary. Tell us the legal recourse that you're pursuing. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, to start with, we've issued a letter ahead of proceedings. So we've invited the Metropolitan Police to withdraw their action and to enter into a proper consultation with us for us to really understand what their issues are. Because I have to say, we still find them quite absurd. I don't know if you know that there's something like 35,000 warranted Metropolitan Police officers, of which the grand total of 440 are Freemasons. Mm-hmm. So you're talking about a fraction of your workforce. It's inconceivable to me that there could be any possible issue whatsoever, and we find it not only unlawful, it's discriminatory, it's unfair, and at the moment, to be a declarable association, you have to declare if you know a villain, if a member of your family's got a criminal conviction. To then add Freemasons to that, we think is frankly absurd and grossly unfair.
Do you accept that Freemasons is a society with secrets?
I think Freemasonry is very open and transparent. You can go on our website, you can visit our building, you can see everything you need to know about us. In fact, I can't think of another private members organisation that publishes the list of their top members. So we publish our top 4,000 members in a book each year that you can go into in our shop and buy.
But why are there?
You can't be more open than that, Nick.
But why are there, Secretary, supposedly these secret handshakes and gestures and other words to promote a conversation between two members?
There's a level of theatre that's involved that you can find out, you can look online. It's no great secret. There's nothing that's there that isn't in open and transparent and that you can find out about. There's theatre involved, as there are with lots of things in life. There's a tradition to it. I would suggest to you that anyone who says anything different, it's absurd. So if I shake your hand, Nick, yeah, you wouldn't know that a handshake is a handshake.
Special handshake, I understand, isn't there?
There is. We call it a grip. But yes, absolutely. There's never been anything secret about that. You can find it out.
What of the expectation of loyalty to each other? I'm quoting Sir Mark directly there. The expectation of loyalty to each other, that could surely get in the way of fair policing, couldn't it? Or policing without fear or favour?
I think that's a deeply misleading statement made by Sir Mark, and I don't know why he said that.
So there is no expectation of loyalty to each other?
Without detriment to yourself, or contrary to the laws of the land and the state that you live in. He missed out the bit that actually makes it explicitly clear that you have to follow the laws of the land. I find that very strange.
He also said that many of his officers welcomed this. Do you buy into that, or is he perhaps just putting forward something that he can't actually justify?
Well, put it this way. They surveyed their 40,000 membership of warranted officers and staff, of which 5,000 chose to reply. So, what's that? Just about 2% chose to reply. I think if you look online to find out what makes a survey significant, it needs to be a minimum of 20%.
But if you're so open, why the concern over this, Grand Secretary?
I think the issue to me, and to most people that I talk to, is where does it then end? We don't live in a police state. This isn't what our country's about. Why not then declare whether you go to a mosque, whether you meet other police officers at church or in a synagogue? It's frankly beyond how as a society we operate.
You're a senior one. What attracted you to become a Mason?
So, I joined in 1989 for no great reason that my then-to-be father-in-law's son didn't want to be a member, and I thought it would endear myself to him. So I haven't got any brilliant reason.
Lastly, can you give us an indication how much money is raised either per annum or has been raised in total or whatever it might be for good causes by the Masonry?
Freemasons, men and women, and let's not forget that it's men and women, contribute something like £50 million a year to society, and that's just financially. That doesn't include the hours that they contribute towards their community service.
And do you recognise, finally, the Commissioner said many women are uncomfortable with it, with members being Freemasons. Why do you suppose that is?
I've no idea. I would suggest they show us the evidence. Freemasons have been women for over 100 years. I think it's a grossly unfair statement to make, unless he's got evidence. And again, it show us the evidence. I don't know what evidence he was referring to when he talks about intelligence. I hope it's more substantial than the recent West Midlands intelligence, but I don't know. We've not been shown it, Nick.
Adrian Marsh is Grand Secretary of the Freemasons, United Grand Lodge of England. Thank you for your input. 29 after 8. We're talking about female Freemasons. Sally's in North Acton, and I believe you are one. Is that right, Sally? Good morning.
Hello, Nick. Good morning.
Hello.
Hope you're well. Yes, I am a female Freemason in an order which has got a rather long name. It's called International Order of Freemasonry for Men and Women, Le Droit Humain.
Oh, right.
And we were founded in France in 1893 and came to the UK in 1902.
Mm-hmm.
And many feminists were members, many suffragettes were members, and the two female-only Grand Lodges were born out of us. Some of them decided they prefer to practice on their own and be women together, but we decided that we would like to be mixed, and we are in over 60 countries of the world. So not that big here, I have to say.
What attracted you to joining it, then?
I wanted, my grandfather was a Freemason in one of the male-only lodges under the United Grand Lodge of England.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew Freemasons existed. I also knew female Freemasons existed because a friend of my mother's was a member of the order to which I now belong.
And the idea that those of us who are not, we see that there are, does appear to be secrets, but the gentleman with whom I'm just speaking say it's just pure theatre, really. Is that how you would characterise it?
It's symbolic. It's symbolic. The purpose of it is to make sure that you are a good person and you have integrity, so you don't go around talking about other people, and you have standards that you adhere to. So the secrets just relate to, as Adrian Marsh said, to grips, which are handshakes, to signs whereby we recognise that we are Masons of a particular...
But why do you need that, lastly, Sally? That all just seems a bit odd. But there's no special code between me and, I don't know, Sheila Fogarty or whatever it might be, or if I see old Swarbs wandering around selling the big issue.
We don't need it, but do judokan fighters need to bow to each other at the beginning of their bout?
Okay.
No, it's a ritual.
All right. Sally, good luck with the money you make for charity. Thank you for your call. I'm late to the news, so I have to move. But coming up, more calls coming in on this. And Mel, I will talk to you about the licence fee. I'm sorry I didn't get to you, but I wanted... It was so pertinent to bring in a female, to bring a female Mason into the conversation there. And then later in the show, if you want to try and take your driving test, I'm afraid you're stuck in neutral.
There's no dates. Another 6 to 8 months. One of my students, she just called me an hour ago. Her theory expiring in 5 days. And she is literally test ready.
Iram Khan is a driving instructor based in London. This, as the news says, they could go back to November 2027 to clear that backlog. Time for some headlines here on LBC. You're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, and the news is with Thomas Watts.
The surviving suspect in the Bondi Beach attack has been charged with 59 offences, including terrorism and murder. Navid Akram is accused of opening fire at a Hanukkah celebration, killing 15 Jewish people. A five-day strike by England's resident doctors is underway. Members of the BMA are walking out in their long-running dispute over pay and jobs. Inflation fell by more than most economists had expected. Last month, prices increased by 3.2% in the year to November, down from 3.6% the month before. LBC weather quite foggy and frosty this morning, then largely cloudy with showers and some heavier rain in the west. A high of 12 degrees.
On the latest episode of The News Agents,
Donald Trump and the BBC and that whopping $10 billion lawsuit that the president has launched. Where does the British public stand with Donald Trump or the BBC?
Get the latest episode of The News Agents with Emily Maitlis, John Sopel and Lewis Goodall. Listen or watch on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
At Fidelity, we've been helping our customers plan for their retirements for nearly 20 years. From understanding how much you'll need to combining multiple pensions, we offer expert insights, excellent service, and even financial advice, so you can feel confidently invested in your future. For pensions, advice, or investment accounts, be invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Transferring is not right for everyone. Terms apply.
Aye, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny?
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things like the upcoming changes to renting are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. These changes will affect how you manage your tenancies. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
When you go abroad, everyone knows the best way to make yourself understood is to just say everything in English, but louder.
Four beers, please, garçon!
If only there was a way that could work with your advertising campaign. Well, there is. And you're listening to it. Because when you amplify your advertising with radio, 40 million listeners every week get the message. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Let's talk more about Freemasonry with Keith in Andover. Keith, you're on the radio. Do you think the Met is right in that we'd like to know that you're a Freemason, or the Masons are right in saying it's discriminatory and unlawful? Which is it? Morning.
Well, good morning, Mr. Ferrari. Great show, long-time listener. The answer is yes. The answer is yes. There's two points here, sir. I was invited to join the Freemasons many years ago, and I refused to do that. And I was told by the people inviting me that I would never have to worry about anything in terms of employment or life, or even my son. And that really bothered me. So there is some sort of a connection between some members.
What did they mean by your son? I just clarify that, if you would. I don't quite get that one.
Well, my son at the time was just a little toddler, and I was in my 30s. I'm not now, of course. And he was expressing that there would be some form of shield that would surround me to help me through life and process, especially within the employment regime. But the point I want to make, sir, is that my mother was actually a member of what you call the Ladies' Glades.
The Ladies' Glades, did you say?
Glades, yes,
yep.
Yes.
Okay.
G-L-A-D-E-S. So if you research that on Google, you'll see that is a female Freemasonry process that exists in the UK today through two main active female only Grand Lodges, which is the Order of the Women Freemasons, the OWF, and the Honourable Fraternity of Ancient Freemasons. And it's mostly derived through charity work and so on and so forth. So there's a good meaning behind it. But my point is, sir, is that...
Oh, please,
I believe
me, Nick.
That
you're making me nervous. I feel really...
sorry, Nick, yeah. I do apologise.
I feel like you're a police officer.
Yeah, so what I understood the Met Commissioner to say, or the police saying, that it was all directed towards officers of a male... male police officers, not females, but females themselves may well be part of that fraternity.
Really well put, Keith. Best wishes to you, your son, and to all your family. We'll come back to this, but I would make the point, if they've nothing to hide, why the concern? And so, Mark, you heard it here on LBC, we've kicked this fight. I'm delighted to say. That's what journalists are put on earth to do. Sit at the back of the room and throw rotten fruit. I'm not here to agree with everyone. But if there's no problem, all I want to know, and you're not going to have your promotion block, we just need to know that Police Sergeant Jones, or whatever his name is a member of the Masons. Okay, thanks very much indeed. Sergeant, on with your work. Good luck. Thanks a lot. If there's no secret, why the problem? We'll return to that in a moment. Front page news this morning. And calling all mums, particularly if you've had one, a caesarean section, because they've become the most common form of birth in England. I'm afraid I don't have figures for the rest of the United Kingdom, but in England, overtaking natural birth for the first time. Figures published yesterday revealed that 45.1% of women who gave birth in 24-25, the last year for which figures are available, delivered their baby via a caesarean, compared with 43.8% of women having unassisted vaginal births. The remaining 11%, if you're busy doing your sums, were assisted vaginal births, which is when medics and clinicians use tools such as forceps to help get baby out. Dr. Stephanie Cook is a GP specialising in women's health. She's based in Liverpool and joins me now. OK, have you noticed this in your day-to-day work? Good morning, Doctor.
Morning, Nick. Nice to speak to you
good
again.
To have you on.
Yes, absolutely. Good to chat. I know we spoke about this about a year or so ago, didn't we? And the statistics have risen further since. Yes, we do notice it. And I think it's really important to spit out that data. So what we have is about a quarter of caesarean sections are emergency. So women are going through labour, they run into complications and end up having an emergency section because ultimately you want a healthy, safe baby out and well and mum and baby well. And then we're looking at about one in five having an elective caesarean. Now, out of that elective caesarean, that's a pre-planned, some of them will be just because maybe of complications in previous pregnancies, health problems, rising, all sorts of other health conditions, and some of them will be a social choice. And NICE guidance is patient choice. So it's tricky. We have to unpick the data, but yes, we're seeing a rise. And I think there's two main things that we want to convey. For those who are choosing a caesarean because they would rather not go through labour and the problems with pelvic floor and would rather not, some people say the phrase too postipous, that's very volatile, isn't it? But some people may make that elective choice for a multitude of reasons. What we need to do is explain the complications.
Go on, I want you
and
to now.
Let's do it. Complications to mum of a caesarean section, infection, bleeding, blood clots, damage to the muscular wall, future pregnancies. That's one of the things I don't think we're conveying enough. When you have a caesarean, they cut through multiple layers of muscle and tissue, and they cut through the womb, and that leaves a little what we call the caesarean niche, a little triangle of empty space where there was tissue. And that makes women far more likely to have pregnancy loss and failure to implant on future pregnancies.
Is that right?
Even uterine rupture, niche ectopics, we call it, basically, where a non-viable pregnancy sits in that scar. So we really need to convey the risks. And to babies, caesarean sections, whether planned or elective, can lead to breathing problems, surgical injury to baby, problems, in neonatal period, and even there's a growing body of evidence of concerns about chronic illness later on in life, type 1 diabetes, asthma, obesity. It's complex, but it's not without risks. So I think there's two main things. One is, if you're choosing purely because of your preference, be aware it's not without its complications. And if it's an emergency section, you'll see in the news today, some of the concern is we have to face facts that the growing rise in obesity and one in four women over the age of 18. Yeah, go on.
Well, no, the line in one of the papers here is, experts say that mums are getting heavier.
It's true, and there are a multitude of reasons for that. But one thing we just need to convey is, we have to be honest, don't we? We have to face the facts.
Yes.
And what we do need to know is, are we really telling women, if you're getting pregnant, do you understand the risks of raised BMI on you and your baby and the benefit of weight loss, both to fertility and to a healthy pregnancy and to the future health of you and your baby? So I think we need to not shy away from the tough conversations.
It says here, studies show obese women are up to twice as likely to need a C-section. Is that roughly tally with your work in the field, Doctor?
Yes, it's true, and it's true because of complications, as we said, between mum and baby. And so we need to just tell patients the facts. We need informed choice. And sometimes it's not a choice. Sometimes that baby's at risk, and we just know we need to go in there and get them out. But did they realise losing a little bit of weight before getting pregnant might have avoided that? Does that make sense?
It makes, as ever, you make perfect sense. And lastly, Doctor, it says here that older mums as well are contributing to that. Again, would you concur?
Yes. Absolutely. Unfortunately, our bodies, our ovaries will age, you know, as, no matter how youthful and how much we try and take care of ourselves. Now, ultimately, for many women, you know, getting pregnant later in life is a joy, a privilege, a deliberate choice. But again, we just need to make them aware. Do they know that their fertility declines a lot after the age of 30, so it's going to be harder to get pregnant, but also increased risk on mum and baby? Doesn't mean that it's not still a wonderful thing to get pregnant in your mid to late 30s, but just that we need to let people know, if you can, have babies earlier.
Always enjoy speaking with you, Dr. Stephanie Cook. You're a GP in Liverpool, specialising in women's health. Thank you for your input on that. We might take calls on that, but at 8:43, we are taking calls on Freemasons. Chandra's in Newcastle. Should people have to declare their Masons to their employers if they're the Met? Good morning.
A very good morning, Nick.
Hello.
I'm not a Freemason,
right.
I'm not advocating on their behalf, but I find it peculiar that we should be, or the Met Police should want to disclose only those that are members of Freemasons. There are so many other private members' clubs, quite a lot of them very influential. For example, Bullington Club, which has contributed to
Be in the Bullington Club, you have to have attended Oxford University, so it's not open to many folk, is it?
No. But that is my point. If you look at journalists and newscasters of the yesteryears, you'll find that majority of them have been drawn from either Oxford and Cambridge. And
no. Did you say journalists?
Well, let me stick to newscasters and even comedians, for instance. Why does one have to be a Cambridge graduate to tell a joke? So,
right. Chandra. Peter Kay did not go to Oxford or Cambridge. Michael McIntyre did not go to Oxford or Cambridge. They are the two highest grossing. We need to check Jimmy Carr.
I said yesteryears, Nick, and I was meaning...
I'm so sorry. I didn't. Yesteryears. Yeah. Right. What sort of time...
Yeah.
Oh, you're talking about the pythons, are you?
No, but let me make the broader case. My broader case is that there are institutions and membership clubs which support the advancement of their members. But there is a lot of secrecy around a lot of these private members' clubs, which exist in every major city in the country.
What other club has that level of secrecy?
Well, I don't. If my well,
I put I, you, I put it to you. By the way, Jimmy Carr did go to Cambridge just before everyone starts texting. I put it to you that there's no other organisation that has this level of secrecy that is open to the common man or woman, by the way. If you attended Oxford, I've no idea. I didn't go.
If we are not attributing criminality, then what really is the matter?
Because it's
what
woven
really is
into
the matter?
Well, I'll tell you what the commissioner sees as the matter, and I'll quote him directly. There's an expectation of loyalty to each other. It is founded on some acts of secrecy. Those are his concerns.
But I mean, if there is no criminality or actions leading towards criminality, then their secrecy and their loyalty to each other should really not affect the society.
Chandra, let's see what others make of it. I'm already late to the news. Thank you for your input. Have yourself a good day. Coming up later in the show, are you or someone you love or know waiting for a driving test? Amish has one.
I want to drive more for independence and just to be able to get out when I can, not having to rely on public transport, taxis and Ubers and so forth.
Now, while I don't know her personal circumstances, if she's not got a date now, the backlog won't be cleared for 2 years. More on that in the next hour. 8:46, LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
24-year-old Navid Akram has been charged with 59 offences, including terrorism and murder, over the Bondi Beach attack. A five-day walkout by resident doctors in England is getting underway, and the rate of inflation fell by more than expected to 3.2% in the year to November. LBC weather, foggy and frosty this morning, then largely cloudy with showers, a high of 12 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. The Arquis in Cranford, the A4 Bath Road westbound is closed because of an accident between Barclay Avenue and Way Avenue. It's slow in Greenwich to the Blackwall Tunnel northbound after a car broke down earlier, so all the lanes are back open there. It's slow in Camberwell on Camberwell Church Street. It's partly blocked both ways. There was a fire in a building earlier between Ben Hill Road and Datchula Place. There's no service on the Woolwich Ferry. That's because of the fog, and the fog also means there's disruption to flights at London City Airport. On the Tube, there's no service on the Bakerloo line between Queen's Park and Harrow and Wealdstone, and minor delays on the rest of the line. That's because of an investigation. And also on the trains, Greater Anglia services aren't moving southbound from Cheshunt to Hackney Downs and Stratford. That's because a train has broken down.
This is LBC.
Hey Sainsbury's, have you got anything to help my money go further?
Well, if you want to make some big savings, make sure to use Nectar Prices and your Nectar Prices at Sainsbury's. Together they can save you over £450 a year on your food shop.
Bring it on.
Download the Nectar app and tap into great savings. Sainsbury's, good food for all of us. 18 plus Nectar app required. For full terms, see help.sainsbury's.co.uk/help/nectar-prices.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
This could be the best Christmas ever. Christmas Cash Call is here with a life-changing £500,000 to be won. Enter this week's draw before 5 p.m. Friday and you could get a call with £500,000. Christmas Cash Call. Text radio to 822 00 to enter now. Text costs £2.50 plus your standard network charge. 18 plus UK only global network competition. Full rules and free entry at christmascashcall.com.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny?
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things like the upcoming changes to renting are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. These changes will affect how you manage your tenancies. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
What should you put on your Christmas list this year? Aldi! We're Quality Food Award Christmas Retailer of the Year for the 6th year in a row. And which cheapest supermarket of the year 4 years running? Get Christmas all wrapped up at Aldi. Visit aldi.co.uk/awards for more.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
At Fidelity, we've been helping our customers plan for their retirement for nearly 20 years. From understanding how much you'll need, to combining multiple pensions, we offer expert insights, excellent service, and even financial advice, so you can feel confidently invested in your future. For pensions, advice, or investment accounts, be invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Transferring is not right for everyone. Terms apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
To declare or not to declare that you're a Mason and you work for the Met. The Met want it, the Masons don't. But why not? couple of emails or texts on that. I'll just change this a little bit. Billy says, my father-in-law was the head of an ambulance service. I won't say which one, if you don't mind. Fought against all the Masons to get there, then worked to remove those who were there for people and had earned their promotions. He knew it was not the case. These were in the top roles in the service. So this is, of course, the idea of helping each other. But here we go. The next, very next one, Anne and St Albans. They swear loyalty to one another. A Mason friend of mine who's 86 is severely crippled and housebound. He had a fall at home. I informed the Masons, knowing him to be one, who went to him, got him up into hospital. He's now recovering. Without their prompt aid, many of them from different lodges working together, he could have died. They look after each other and look out for others. Let's get rid of all clubs. The Women's Institute. No one could be part of anything. My mum was in the Women's Institute, I can assure you. There's no secret aspect of joining the Women's Institute. Or what do they say to each other? Are you on the square? Is it, are you on the square? I think that's what you meant to say. No, how old's your grandmother? That's right. How old's your grandmother? And then you say, 181. Well, this is what I'm told. I'm not a Mason. And that is the number of the lodge you belong to. So how old's your grandmother? 181. And then you say, ah, so you're the 181. I don't know why they do it all. We might continue with that. Pippa is in Knutsford, or Knutsford, really, to talk about a C-section. Hello, Pippa. Did you have one?
Good morning, Nick. Yes, I did.
Was that elected? Was it your choice?
It was elected, Nick, yes.
Might I ask why you chose to do it? I'm not criticising for a second. I'm just asking why you chose to do it.
No, I'm very used to that question and judgment.
Oh, no, I wasn't being judged.
I know
please,
you're not judging.
Please, I wasn't being judged. I'm just genuinely interested why you chose.
Yeah, my particular instance was for medical reasons. I'd had previous operations which deemed it was safest for me and the baby to have a C-section elected.
And I trust it all went okay. That's the most important.
It did.
It did. Brilliant. Okay. So. And was this your first baby?
That was my first baby, yeah.
Okay. Have you had others?
I have not.
Yeah. Now, the interesting point that was made by the doctor was that there are, and obviously this is going to be close to you because you've got the various organs and others, and I haven't, but there were going to be issues down in your reproductive area that could possibly become a slightly problematic later in life. Were you told that at the time?
Absolutely not. And although I agree with what you're saying, and I did my own research at the time anyway, so I understood there are risks. But there are also a lot of risks with natural childbirth, and that is what she neglected to highlight or stress on. And I felt really upset listening to that, because that narrative is exactly what I went through the entire pregnancy, through every appointment, every single person on the street I spoke to. If I mentioned I was having an elected C-section, it was a judgment and a why, and I had the comment many times of, oh, you're too posh to push.
Oh,
never
no.
Once did any midwife or any nurse or any expert say to me, oh, but do you understand the risks of the C-section? It was just, well, why? Because natural is better. But no one would ever explain, and no one took the time, and there was a judgment.
How long ago was this, Pippa?
3.5 years ago.
Okay. And did they not sympathise with the way that you explained it, that there was a pre-existing...
Never. The judgment from the midwives and nurses every time, and I used to have to explain myself time and time again. They had my medical notes in front of me. They could see, but every time I had to say it, it was just a roll of the eyes, even to the day I went in.
No way. Oh, God. Okay. The procedure and the recovery, was it roughly how you thought it would be? Did it take longer? Was it had a bigger impact or less impact than you thought it would be? How would you, looking back on it, how would you relate to it?
Nick, I checked into the hospital at 8 a.m. Yeah. By 9:15, I had a baby in my arms, a cup of tea and buttered toast. It was the most wonderful experience.
Wow. My goodness.
I can tell you, out of our baby group of 10 women, I was the only one having an elected C-section. 5 of the others ended up having to have emergency C-sections. Now, I understand with emergency sections, because it's not planned and not prepared for, there can be a hell of a lot of complications and messes. They all came out of it unscathed, but they did have more worrying stories than I did. Mm-hmm. But the friends that went through natural labour, well, I would not want to go through that for love nor money. And no one came out of it with a medal.
Right. No.
So, and this country is really backwards in thinking. When I lived in America for 8 years, and there, C-section is very commonly had. I spent a lot of time.
And do you think, did you have any girlfriends who had a C-section in the States? And do you think there's not that sort of level of disdain shown with the American medical profession as there is with the British?
All but one of my girlfriends had C-sections in the States.
That's right. Okay. How
and no, there's not over there. But it's just, and recently a friend of mine just had a baby. Thankfully, she pushed to have an elective C-section at the end. And when they did it, they discovered that her placenta had been dissolving away. And had she waited another day, she would have lost the baby. But the midwives in her hospital were forcing her, really trying to force her to have an induction.
And she pushed and pushed against them in the end and had the C-section, thank goodness, and she's alive and well, and so is the baby.
Finally, let me read you this text that's just come in from a mum who asks me just to identify herself as Kay. When I was in labour in November 94, so it is some time ago, and it was clear things weren't progressing, I asked for a C-section. The doc's answer, and this is in quotes, by the way, Pippa, the doc's answer, quotes, we are not in the act of barbarism, close quotes. 24 hours later, when my child was in distress, I was hastily prepared for an emergency C-section. I sense that's the same sort of sentiment that was expressed to you more recently.
Yes.
It's not fair.
My consultant actually did say to me, if we did more elective C-sections in this country and had babies preterm or up when they're due, we would have less stillbirth in this country, because the danger of waiting to have natural and going past your due date is huge, and you could risk losing your baby. So I've had friends that have had stillborns, and it's horrendous, and I would never wish that on anyone.
So the little one is 3 and a half, with Christmas around the corner. What is he or she getting for Christmas, unless they're listening?
No, he's having a train. He's not listening this morning, but he is one of your biggest fans, and he calls you Uncle Nick. And in the morning, he insists on having Uncle Nick. And if I dare to put Heart FM on, I have to put Uncle Nick back on.
We're going to clip that and play that on a loop, I think. What's he getting for Christmas? I don't ask his name unless you want to tell me. What's the lad getting for Christmas?
His name's Harry, and he's getting a train. Harry's and many
getting
other things.
Oh, fantastic. It's going to be lively in Pippa's house in Knutsford, Cheshire. Knutsford, really. Pippa, thank you. Best wishes to young Harry. Maybe I should record. Why don't I record a message? Talk to Pippa. Let's record a Christmas message to Harry. Let's do it. I'm looking at my colleague to make it happen. Pippa, stay on the line. I'll record it after the show. We'll play it to somehow. Bex in Solihull. Sorry to keep you on the line. Tell me about the C-sections. Bex, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I guess listening to your other callers, I feel in a similar position. So I was overdue by a week, was pressured very heavily by the medical professional to have an induction. I didn't really want it, but coming up to Christmas in 2020, went with that option. I was in labour for 2 days, in severe pain, and kind of because I wasn't dilated enough, they said, no, you can't have any gas and air. You can only have paracetamol.
Paracetamol, have a baby? God, that helps me with a hangover.
Contractions that were so close together, but but equally not progressing. The conversation, I'm someone that likes to plan ahead, trying to see kind of light at the end of the tunnel, and the question I was asking was, at what point do we just say this is not happening, we move to a C-section? They just said, well, we're not at that point, and refused to kind of give another 2 hours, another 4 hours, any sort of timeline. So 2.5 days later, my baby was born. Right. I by that point, I'd started with sepsis because I had been in labour for so long. And actually, on reflection, if anyone said, if I had another child in the future, induction or a C-section, I'd pick a C-section every time, much more of a controlled environment.
Even given the issues, lastly, that the doctor explained about 20 minutes or so ago, regards future conception and also other areas of your body, if you know what I'm saying, without going too far?
Absolutely. I think, that it's much more of a controlled environment than the kind of hell I was put through, really.
Bex, I'm sorry it ended that way. Thank you for your call, and be well. Love to everyone in the family. Just before we go to the news, what do you suppose the average cost of a birth to the NH it was last year? It cost £5,417, an average birth. A planned C-section is £4,000, but it rises to considerably over £5,000 if there are complications, and can be north of £6,000. Interesting, isn't it? And just lastly on this, the number of babies born fell to its lowest last year in 23 years. We're not having as many babies. It's still 542,235, which is quite a lot, but it is lowest for some years. All right, the music means we must move on. And to the workplace. Is it okay to call someone who has ADHD disorganised for an employment tribunal? No, but there is more to that story. Here's campaigner Charlie Hart.
It isn't a condition that we live with. It's the way that our brain is wired.
Plus, the backlog of driving tests extending nearly 2 years. Adam Khan is a driving instructor in London.
There's no dates, another 6 to 8 months. One of my students, she just called me an hour ago. Her theory expiring in 5 days, and she is literally test ready.
Those stories and more will follow the 9 o'clock news on LBC.
on your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, a man who woke from a coma yesterday has been charged over the Bondi Beach terror attack. Navid Akram is facing 59 charges, including terrorism and the murders of 15 people over the Hanukkah shooting. The first funerals for the victims have taken place. Mendy Lent knew fellow rabbi Eli Schlanger, who died in Sydney on Sunday.
Eli was really very full of life and energy and positivity. I spent some time in Australia studying 20 years ago, and he was there at the same time. Always had a big smile. He had like an infectious love for people and really spread. He just brought positivity into the room wherever he was.
A 5-day strike by resident doctors in England has started, despite warnings patients could come to harm. Ministers have accused the BMA of staging the walkout at a time intended to inflict as much damage as possible. The union says the government's latest offer doesn't go far enough on pay and job opportunities. The main rate of inflation has fallen to its lowest level since March. Prices rose by 3.2% in the year to November, down from 3.6% a month earlier. Christian May, editor-in-chief at City AM, says grocery prices were the main driver.
Food and drink inflation fell from 4.9 to 4.2. Alcohol and tobacco eased from just south of 6% to 4%. And in restaurants and hotels, it slipped from 3.8 to 3.5%. What does it mean? Well, the first thing to consider is that this really does now lead into expectations that the Bank of England will tomorrow cut interest rates.
The son of the Hollywood director, Rob Reiner, has been charged with two counts of first-degree murder. He is accused of killing his father and mother, Michelle, at their family home in Los Angeles. The UK appears set to rejoin the European Union's student exchange programme, Erasmus. It would clear the way for British students to participate in the scheme from January 2027. And England's cricketers have made a promising start to their must-win third Ashes test against Australia. They kept the hosts to 326 for 8 on a batting surface in Adelaide. Jofra Archer took 3 wickets, with Bryden Carse and Will Jacks claiming a couple each. Australia, who lead the 5-match series 2-0, only need to avoid defeat to retain the urn. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading up 89 at 97.73. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 14. LBC weather, foggy and frosty this morning, but largely cloudy with showers later, some heavier rain in the west, a high of 12 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
It's the last chance to get yourself a ticket for tonight's Lotto draw.
It could be you.
Lotto, from the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
This is LBC, from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 4 minutes after 9, Wednesday the 17th of December. An intriguing case coming before an employment tribunal. A worker was called disorganised and it has been termed discrimination. But there are mitigating causes and we'll give you more on that. Plus, coming back after Brexit, British students will be able to study abroad at European universities after that high-profile EU scheme is reintroduced. I'll be asking, did you benefit from studying overseas? In what way did you do that? Or is this something that you would want to seek to pursue yourself or possibly for your children or even let your grandchildren know about it? Plus, I've mentioned it already, this backlog, if you're trying to get behind the wheel, I'm afraid you're still stuck in neutral, as is learner driver Amisha.
I want to drive more for independence and just to be able to get out when I can, not having to rely on public transport, taxis and Ubers and so forth.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 60 60973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Intriguing story, and as is often the case, this is quite fragmented and different aspects to this. I'm afraid you're going to have to hear from me for a little while. Why don't I just run through it before we get to an expert who can give us pointers for our conversation. And I'm taking this from the Daily Telegraph, which always does these cases very well because they've got so much more room with those broadsheet pages. Anyway, enough from newspapers. Calling a colleague disorganised amounts to harassment, an employment tribunal has ruled. A judge saying the use of the adjective could undermine colleagues and violate their dignity. Cambridge Employment Tribunal found that Nicole Hogger, who was a public relations worker, was harassed after her manager described her as disorganised. Now, she argued she'd been treated unlawfully because she has ADHD. Just to remind you, that's attention deficit
hyperactivity disorder, and has now won claims of disability harassment, disability discrimination, and unfair constructive dismissal. She will receive compensation from the firm Genesis PR, which is based in Ipswich, Suffolk. She worked as a PR account manager. She was diagnosed with ADHD in 2021. Her doctor found she showed, and I quote, poor organisation, forgetfulness, and difficulty getting started on tasks requiring significant mental effort, close quotes. That medical report was not shared with her managers. Okay, so that's one key wrinkle. The following year, a manager at the firm emailed Alison Straker. Now, that's it. This is Miss Hogger's line manager. So, okay, so the young woman who has ADHD, her line manager gets emailed saying she, quotes, seems to be slipping behind with work again, and clients were asking about the progress of commissioned work. In June 2023, Miss Straker spoke with Ms. Hogger, the young woman with ADHD. She said she'd previously told colleagues she'd been out for a massage, to Starbucks or to the supermarket when she was supposed to be contactable. Surely that has nothing to do with ADHD, is it? She'd gone out to get a massage, to get a coffee, or go to the supermarket. Ms. Straker said such behaviour could lead colleagues to think Ms. Hogger was disorganised or uncommitted, placed her on a performance improvement plan. The following day, the young woman resigned, writing a letter. She strongly felt it was time to take a new path and continue her professional development elsewhere. Surely a young woman who the clients aren't able to get hold of at a time when they think they should, and it turns out she is uncontactable because she's either gone for a massage, a coffee, or to the supermarket, does that not show a level of disorganisation? Well, now we can bring in an expert. Samantha Hugh is founder of ADHD Girls. And it's far better if you explain what that does than I attempted. In a sentence, Samantha Hugh, what is ADHD Girls all about? Good morning.
Hello, thank you so much for having me. ADHD Girls. ADHD Girls is a social impact company founded with a dual mission to empower neurodivergent women to thrive in society, and that's in education and workplace settings, as well as humanising neurodiversity in all the systems that we live in.
How much understanding of people, girls if you prefer, doesn't matter, of workers with ADHD is there, do you think?
There is definitely a very divided understanding, just because society has been fed with a stigma that has lived for over a century. And so people don't really fully appreciate what it means to be diagnosed, especially later in life, with ADHD.
For the young woman here, who clients needed to contact her, they couldn't, because the day when she should have been able to answer her telephone, she wasn't sure whether she'd gone for a massage, a coffee, or to the supermarket. How acceptable is that in the workplace?
The thing is, if someone does have ADHD or autism or any other neurodivergence, it's considered an invisible disability. So the employer do need to provide reasonable adjustments. But in the case that you just mentioned, because she hasn't opened up about it, I think it surprised everyone. You know, and also I think we're dealing with a separate threat here in terms of neurodivergence and, you know, generational differences. You know, and what the younger generations perhaps expect, you know, and yeah, so they're two parallel tracks.
Indeed. So, in your view, what should this young woman, her name is Nicole, what should Nicole's line manager have done then?
So, when she knows that there is an employee with ADHD, then she should provide reasonable adjustments and also be mindful of the language that she used to speak to this young woman as well, you know, and perhaps...
Aware, and again, I'm not criticising this young woman, and the most important thing is her emotional health, but you're aware the woman at the heart of this, Nicole, did not share her doctor's diagnosis with her employers.
Do you know, like, many don't, because they don't feel, like, safe
employer,
to do so.
Say I'm... Do you have ADHD? Might I ask, do you have ADHD?
Sorry, are you asking me?
Yeah,
I'm very literal.
Okay, well, let's just assume the case that I'm an employer and I have someone who does have ADHD. If they don't tell me, Samantha, how am I meant to know?
You just won't. And you will have to observe. And, many employers don't know. That's half the problem. But the other half of the problem is that people will only open up about their diagnosis if they feel safe to do so. So there's a lot of talk in neurodiversity at work about psychological safety.
Just expand on that, if you would. What does that mean, psychological safety?
So, yeah, psychological safety means emotional safety. It's when you are able to open up without the fear of repercussions.
So do you feel, again, not you personally, so I want to take it away from you. Does someone with ADHD, when you talk about, do they think they'll lose their job? Do they think they'll be bullied? Do you think they'll
absolutely.
Be teased?
Absolutely.
All of the above.
Like I said, we've been dealing with this stigma for over a century, and younger people are getting diagnosed, and they don't know whether that's going to bring on, you know, any repercussions if they open up. So there is a huge movement in the workplace, the neurodiversity at work movement, is to try and, you know, provide more understanding for employers.
So just as we come to the end of our conversation, thank you for all your input. When the clients can't get hold of this young woman, her line manager, her boss, puts on what's called a performance improvement plan.
Mm-hmm.
Surely that is a construct, and the young woman the following day decides she's going to quit. But surely such a plan is the sort of thing someone with that condition might be looking for?
No. Sadly, no. This is all too common. People don't open up about their diagnosis until they are judged about it in their performance review. I wrote about this.
But do you have sympathy for the bot, for the employer?
Well, I have sympathy for both sides, to be honest, just because we are in uncharted territory.
No, I have enormous sympathy for Nicole, but I also have considerable sympathy for the boss, because if she's not been told, how is the boss meant to know that this young woman has the condition?
Yeah, you are really stating the very difficulty that everyone is going through right now in the workplace, because we're all walking on eggshells around these new terms that we have to navigate.
Okay, lastly, what would your message be to employers, to bosses with staff in these situations?
Is to be, like, to stay updated and aware of what neurodiversity means and to educate all your team members, you know, so, like, you don't unknowingly put yourself into a situation like this, because it's very common right now for people to take their employers to tribunal when they feel misunderstood.
The ADHD Girls is the organisation. The founder is Samantha Hugh. Thank you for your input on that. See, Employment Judge Roger Tynan concluded that the company did not consider the young woman's ADHD, and it was reasonable for her to think the disorganised remark had, quotes, violated her dignity. Her claims of disability harassment, disability discrimination, unfair constructive dismissal were upheld. Compensation to be determined at a later date. I really want to get this bit out here. And I don't know how helpful it is for this young woman to have a story plastered all across the papers, and I hope she's in good employment. I hope it doesn't prohibit that. But if your employer and the employee doesn't tell you, how are you meant to know? Susan's in Salisbury. Susan, what's the point you want to make? Good morning.
Good morning. I was an occupational health nurse and retired a couple of years ago because I was starting to get disillusioned with the number of people who don't want to work or are being unfair on their employers. I'm quite intrigued by this case because there is a considerable amount of case law where employees have not disclosed conditions that might come under the Equality Act. And of course, you never know until you go to court whether or not it does.
No.
They have lost their cases because, as you've just pointed out, the employer can't act if they don't know.
No.
The other thing is that employers are only required to input reasonable adjustments. If this is not operationally or financially possible, this then falls under the capability system, and they are not capable to fulfill their role. And I feel very sorry for employers, because actually, if you're a small employer and you don't have access to an occupational health organisation, although any employer can contact one. It is quite a scary place to be. You don't know how to be
as an employer.
Employees.
It would be horrific. I would be walking on eggshells with these folk, because I wouldn't want to do anything to upset them. They are to a degree vulnerable. They need some assistance, but they've got to tell me their problem.
Absolutely. There are a lot of people also playing the system. I mean, one of the reasons I stopped was the number of young people coming to occupational health with anxiety and playing the system. They're being coached on what to say. They then come under the Equality Act. They then leave their jobs, go on benefits. And this is not a blanket thing. That's really unfair, because I don't want it to be a blanket thing. But I just feel A lot of people are very down on employers, and most of them are doing their best.
Susan, thank you for your input of having worked in the field. Gabby says this is nonsense. ADHD doesn't have to mean complete lack of responsibility or understanding of workplace expectations. I'm late diagnosed ADHD. If you're not able to do the job and deal with clients, then you need to get a job more suited to your skill set. Adam says, disorganized is unfair. I have ADHD. It's just how my brain works. I struggle to advance plan, but can react to make decisions and function very well. For people without it, I say, it's like Formula One, which is planned to the second, versus a ski slalom. ADHD is like the slalom. All right, more calls coming in on this. If we're talking about slalom, let's talk about trying to get on the roads. Let's talk about trying to get a driving test and wait for nearly 2 years to clear the backlog. We'll look at that. And Joy, coming back after Brexit, the so-called Erasmus scheme allowing British students to go overseas. Alex Stanley is with the NUS, National Union of Students.
I was initially signed up to a year abroad alongside my degree, but it just looked so expensive. And so the news that we're going to be rejoining Erasmus is a real win for students.
It's 9:16, LBC News Headlines, Thomas Watts.
24-year-old Navid Akram has been charged with 59 offences, including terrorism and murder, over the Bondi Beach attack. A 5-day walkout by resident doctors in England is getting underway, and the rate of inflation fell by more than expected to 3.2% in the year to November. LBC weather, foggy and frosty this morning, then largely cloudy with showers, a high of 12 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. It's slow on the M1 northbound. There's one lane closed because a car is having a tyre change between junction 8 for Hemel Hempstead and junction 9 for Redbourne. There are queues on the A12 and on the North Circular approaching the Redbridge roundabout. There's one lane blocked on the roundabout because of an accident. There are delays in Hayes. North Hyde Road eastbound is blocked because a bus has broken down at Roseville Road. There's no service on the Woolwich Ferry because of the fog. There's also disruption affecting flights at London City Airport because of the fog. On the Tube, there's no service on the Bakerloo line between Queen's Park and Harrow and Wealdstone, and minor delays on the rest of the line. That's after there was an investigation. And on the trains, Greater Anglia and Stansted Express have delays of up to 15 minutes and cancellations between Liverpool Street and Chesant.
This is LBC.
At Morrison's, our Christmas centrepieces are better than half price. Pick up a British beef joint for £6.49 per kilo, a whole leg of lamb for £7.50 per kilo, or British pork loin for £3.75 per kilo. Morrison's, making more of Christmas. Majority of stores and online excludes Morrison's Daily. Max 4 in store 2 online was £8 to £19 per kilo. Ends 24th of December.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
For people living with dementia, Christmas can be confusing, overwhelming, heartbreaking. Families are often left to cope alone. But you can help a family reimagine Christmas. Donate to Alzheimer's Society and you can help provide practical support, expert advice and crucial companionship this Christmas. It will take a society to beat dementia and we can't do it without you. Search Alzheimer's Society and donate today.
Gift more for less when you shop at the O2 this Christmas. Save up to 70% off RRP on over 60 of their favourite designer brands, including Nike, Tommy Hilfiger, Le Creuset, The Cosmetics Company Store and Lindt. Ticked everyone off your list. Start the festivities at one of our 30 bars and restaurants. Enjoy a movie or get competitive with bowling, climbing, interactive football, indoor skydiving and more. Find us at North Greenwich, just 15 minutes from central London. Search outlet shopping at the O2 to start planning your visit.
Protect your pets over this festive period. Visit petsinapickle.co.uk and enjoy Christmas covered.
Make this Christmas a jingle belter from well-nice appetizers like Aldi's Himalayan salt-aged smoked salmon to proper naughty desserts such as their melting milk chocolate baubles with caramel sauce. Your table spread will totally slay. Go all fancy with Aldi, specially selected.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
This is a fascinating case. The most important thing is that the young woman I hope she has found other employment, otherwise she gets other employment, and this doesn't prohibit her from getting any work. But my goodness, there's a lot out there from the results of this employment tribunal. Right, who's been hanging on the line? Kevin in Lee-on-Sea. Kevin, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. So, look, I come at this actually from both perspectives. One from a father who has an adult daughter who was diagnosed in her teenage years with autism, high-functioning autism, and ADHD.
What made you think your daughter might have the condition? Was it her education? What was happening?
Yes, there were signs throughout her younger childhood, but it wasn't obvious to a new parent because she was their first child, so you don't really know how these things are supposed to work out, but they manifest themselves in many ways as she entered into puberty. And anyway, we were able to get help for it, and she got diagnosed, and that helped. That helped enormously. So, having come into adulthood, she's got into work, and on each occasion when she's gone into work, she has been very open and honest and declared her condition. And it is just a condition. It's not an illness. There's no cure for it. Yeah. All people do is they learn to live with it. They learn to manage it and live with it. There is no cure for it because it is just how they are. But both employers that she's had to date, and she's been in work since she was 18. She's been in work all the time, never been out of work. It's never prevented her from working. But they have both been excellent with her because they know of the condition, because she's declared it. And she said, look, there are times when I get burnout, when I get overstressed, when I get anxiety, and I may just need to take a step back. And when that happens...
What sort of line is she in, Kevin?
She was in retail. She now works in a veterinary clinic.
Okay.
But now, on the other hand, I am personally a professional consultant. I run my own consultancy business. I advise businesses on all aspects, including
staff
nature.
On the books?
Not now. Right. Well, only my wife, me and my wife. We used to have staff, but I've paid it back. But the point being is that... And I used to work for a very large global corporate doing what I do now. So the point is, from employers' perspective, it is incredibly important that whilst there is no legal requirement to declare a medical illness, if you then withhold that information from the employer cannot manage it, as has been the case with my daughter.
That's what I find so extraordinary with this case, because the judge has found against the firm in Suffolk, but the firm, if the evidence that's presented in the firm were never informed of the condition.
Well, exactly, and that's my point. So employment law requires the employer to make reasonable adjustments for declared medical conditions. Now, how could the employer possibly have made reasonable adjustments if the employee had not declared that she had this issue? Well, exactly, so it was. So I think the employer was damned if they didn't, because how could they possibly make adjustments? Had they known, then it would have been much easier for them to manage the situation. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, I don't know the details of this case, so I don't know if the employer was an exemplary employer. But, you know, the general rule is that my experience is, both from a personal and professional perspective, employers are generally receptive to this. And it's certainly, listening to a caller earlier, it's certainly not a barrier to employment. In fact, I think in some ways the honesty is more of an indication of the integrity of the person that they're dealing with, that they're interviewing.
And that's going to become an employee. Best wishes to your daughter in her line of work, and of course the whole family for what you do as well. Kevin, thank you. More on this to come. But I have mentioned a couple of occasions frustration in the world of motoring, or driving instructions, I should say, because you may be aware, and I think in part COVID played a result, a part in this, I'm sorry. But there was a plan to try and get the whole of the country, and this is the whole of the United Kingdom, not just England, to try and get the target for waiting times to 7 weeks. But now it is announced from the National Audit Office that it's not likely to get to there until November 2027, i.e. all but 2 years. Mark Bourne is head of the Academy at the AA Driving School and joins me now. I mentioned COVID. What are the other causes of this extraordinary backlog, would you say, Mr. Bourne? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. So certainly it started with COVID, and that seven-week target, that is what, you know, it used to be life before COVID and before the pandemic, before 1.1 million tests, you know, estimated didn't take place during that period. But we are 5 years on from that now. And so there is obviously other causes and other factors that are coming into play here. That means that, unfortunately, we still haven't.
What
really
are those other
forward.
Factors, Mark?
Well, after COVID, we certainly then saw the rise in reselling the tests. Bots that used to, you know, that's
sorry, how do I resell? What is a resell?
So this is basically, you normally, the way that you would buy a test is you go on and you go onto the website and you pay £62 for your driving test.
Right.
However, people are actually buying those tests at £62, no intention of actually using that for themselves or any personal use, and then reselling that spot. And some people are actually paying up to £500 for these tests.
And that's legal?
To resell tests, there are no laws to say that you can't resell tests.
I mean, let's talk about the morality, but it's not actually actionable. Oh,
it's definitely not ethical.
And
how do these
people then, you go online and you say, I need a driving test in Cheshire or something, and then someone comes back to you. Is that how it works, effectively?
So there's a number of different ways that it is happening. And what the DVSA are doing to try and get a crackdown on this, they've changed things like terms and conditions of the booking systems and things like that. But actually, from spring next year, they're bringing in that actually only a pupil can book a driving test and nobody else can book it. Because at the moment, driving schools can book things and things like that.
Would it be linked in with their driver's license number or something like that? Because presumably your provisional license has, probably my provisional license still got the number that I have on my full license. I don't know, but surely there's a fairly easy way to do it that way, Mark.
I think there is. There is, at the moment, there's two booking systems as well. There's a business booking tool whereby driving schools, driving instructors and other people that are associated with the industry can actually book tests. And I think that's the one that, you know, if that's closed down and only allows learners to book their own tests, then there is that sense that the reselling of tests will stop in that respect. There's still a bit of a case of bots scraping tests and getting cancellations and reselling those through the main booking system. But I think the ultimate bit is either it's the provisional license or even the government gateway and having, you know, having somebody having to have a government gateway to actually book their own test.
The gateway number. Mark Bourne, thank you. You're head of the Academy at the AA Driving School. Reactions coming in on this. Ron Jukes, there are people like Ticket Touts bulk buying these tests. Needs to stop. My son is taking lessons to book his test. Don't worry, for the same price again, he can go to a tout to change the test in the next 2 weeks. That's what we just heard, Mr. Jukes. Tests. People who are looking for tests not go further afield because I'm not sure if that's clogged up. In the Midlands, I wanted to get my driving license. I'd look elsewhere. They were telling me I wouldn't get a test till 2027. Lauren's in Shrewsbury on this. What are you going to tell me, Lauren? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick.
Hello, Lauren. What are you telling me?
Good morning. I want to get a different perspective on this. So my dad's a driving instructor.
How long have you been doing that?
Oh, over 30 years, 35, 40 years, a long, long time.
Oh, very good. Has he been? That's a heck of a job for doing that amount of time, isn't it? My God, he must be such a patient man.
I don't know how he does it.
No.
He couldn't help me learn to drive, that's for sure, because we fell out too many times.
I can't imagine it's that easy to have your father or your mother as your driving instructor. It's not going to be straightforward, is it?
No, absolutely not. And the point that I would like to make is that he is, I don't want to disclose his age, but he's past retirement age.
Mm-hmm.
He was supposed to retire 2 years ago,
mm-hmm.
Or at least cut down his hours, but there is absolutely no way that that's going to be able to happen. He's got an 18-month backlog.
Oh, I mean, he could stop taking bookings, I suppose, couldn't he? No?
The thing is, there's people on the books that he wants to get through tests.
I see, yeah.
And he can't, obviously, when you've been working with them for a long time, you don't want to just give up on them.
So what would happen? Someone says to your dad this afternoon, or your dad says actually to a client, yep, you're there, well done, let's put in for your test. How long, typically, do you think it would be before that client actually had his or her test?
You're looking at two and a half years.
So it's exactly what they said. And are you aware of this sort of touting, effectively, that you can buy them? People are flogging them.
Yeah, no, it has been mentioned sort of around the dinner table, I suppose, that that's a constant battle. And I think the DVSA need to step in to quickly to try and make these changes because this isn't a new thing. This has been going on for 6, 7, 8 months.
Mm. Last question. How many tests, as the daughter of a driving instructor, I hope the answer is going to be one. How many driving tests, Lauren, did you require to gain your full licence?
I have a confession.
No, never mind, no confessions about it. What number are we looking at?
So, my practical test, I passed first time with two minors.
Right.
But my theory test, I had to take 7 times.
Your theory, is that the written one, is it?
Yes, it is, yeah.
So you need the theory before the practical, don't you?
Yes, that's it.
So you had six false starts before you could actually...
Yes.
What? How did Dad react to that?
Oh, it was just keep going. just keep going.
You got there. Love to all. Lauren, thank you. Give your father my best wishes. In other news, joy breaks out. Students will be able to study abroad at European universities after a high-profile EU scheme has come back for the first time since Brexit. Details follow this. 9:30 breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC The News, Thomas Watts.
A five-day walkout by resident doctors in England is getting underway. Health leaders say this strike will be more challenging due to the onset of winter pressures and rising flu. A 15-year-old boy has been charged with the murder of a 9-year-old girl in Weston-super-Mare. Aria Thorpe was found with a single stab wound on Monday evening. The surviving suspect in the Bondi Beach attack has been charged with 59 offences, including terrorism and murder. Navid Akram is accused of opening fire at a Hanukkah celebration, killing 15 Jewish people. And in the last few minutes, it has been confirmed the UK will rejoin the EU's Erasmus student exchange scheme. LBC weather, largely cloudy with showers today, some heavier rain in the west, a high of 12 degrees.
This is LBC.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny.
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things like the upcoming changes to renting are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. These changes will affect how you manage your tenancies. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
What makes the best roast dinner is deeply personal. And we've all got strong opinions on whether it's best with beef or chicken, roasties or mash, and if cauliflower cheese really belongs. It doesn't, by the way. But one thing isn't up for debate. A roast is always better with deliciously crispy, fluffy Paxo stuffing. Mmm. A roast isn't a roast without Paxo, the original stuffing, lovingly crafted since 1901.
There's an old Thai saying that roughly translates as, the family who takes the internet on holiday can locate a less crowded beach. Particularly handy, my friend, if it's peak mating season for nippy little crabs. Pack the internet with an eSIM from Aerolo. That's A-I-R-A-L-O.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
And as I speak, it has literally, that's an overused word, been confirmed within the last 3 or 4 or 5 minutes that Britain will rejoin the Erasmus programme. It's official. Students will be able to study abroad at European universities under a high-profile EU scheme. This is the first time since Brexit. Ministers have announced that the UK will rejoin, and it's the exchange programme from 2027. That year could be very important to you if you're of a certain age. You are, if eligible, be able to spend a year at a European university as part of your UK degree course without paying extra fees, and quite rightly, it's vice versa for European students. This is the first tangible outcome of Sir Keir's reset with the EU. Follows talks last week between Europe Minister Nick Thomas Simmons and his EU counterpart. Both sides needed to agree a deal before the new year so that it could be locked in from 2027. In negotiations, Britain asked for 50% discount on the £120 million cost of the programme, EU offering just 30% off for the first year. We will hear more details of the financial settlement later. Right, that's the headline and the background. What's the reality as it touches your lives? Lara's in Borehamwood. Lara, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick.
You've done it in the past or you're doing it again? What's the story? Or you're doing it for the first time, I should say.
I did it in 2007.
Okay, right. Where did you go?
I went to the University of Vienna.
Oh, one of my brothers went there. How strange. What were you studying?
I did a German degree, so it was part of my degree to go there.
My brother was doing a German degree, and he went there as well. He loved every minute of it. What was it like for you?
Absolutely loved every second of it.
What was so special about Vienna?
It's a wonderful city, wonderful people, and I met my husband from the programme.
Oh, that's nice. Okay, your husband is Austrian?
He's actually Brazilian.
Right, what is a Brazilian doing wandering around Vienna? Studying German.
He was at a different university.
Oh,
he wasn't studying German.
Right, okay.
Whilst I was there, I went to an event and we met. But I'd never have been in Vienna without Erasmus.
Okay. And, well, this is fantastic. So you met in 2000s. Oh, my goodness. You're approaching... Did you get married straight away or did you date for a while?
No, we just had our 13th anniversary.
Oh, fantastic. Congratulations to you. What about, if I take you back a few years to your student days, did most of your university contemporaries do the same?
Well, everyone on our German degree did. At Manchester Met's, where I was, there was German, French, Spanish and Italian. And we all either spent half a year in each country of whichever language we were studying or the whole year.
So you found love, which is marvellous. But what did you find for your educational position? How much did you learn? What did you learn about, possibly learn about yourself, not just learn about German?
It was amazing being able to see how a different university functioned. I mean, the University of Vienna the building is amazing. The teachers were great. You also get to take other electives. So you get to go into other subjects. So I got to go into like a law translation class. It was very, very interesting. And then after completing Erasmus, I got a job in Vienna and we stayed for 5 years.
Oh, fantastic. So when Britain Brexited, and we won't need to revisit that one so much, but when Britain Brexited, do you think this was one of the great losses from the whole procedure?
Absolutely. It made us so sad. And we had to call in because we were so happy it's starting again.
And it's official. It was announced 5 minutes ago. Give my best to your husband and good luck. Do you go back to Vienna at all?
We have gone back to visit. We now have two daughters and we really want to take them when they're a bit bigger so we can show them where everything started.
I'm afraid I've only ever visited Vienna in the summer. I've never. They must have the most amazing Christmas market, I would imagine, in Vienna, don't they?
At the Rathaus, it's absolutely amazing.
The Town and Hall. Did you say the Rathaus?
Yes, Town Hall.
Yeah.
And that's actually the building we met in because we went to one of the Viennese balls and we met there.
Oh, you went to one of those that like Out of the Sound of Music?
It's absolutely stunning.
I can hear the love in your voice for Vienna and all things Viennese. You're in a Viennese world. Oh, very well done. Congratulations, love to the family. Have a great Christmas if you get over. Christmas markets. I meant to try and do one. I've run out of time again, haven't I? Damn. Oh, well. Hopefully there's always next year. Right. Let's come back to the conversation we were having about a young woman who has ADHD and she had a diagnosis, which it appears she chose not to share with her employer. So when she works in PR, so when agencies were meant to be able to contact her one day and they couldn't, and she couldn't remember whether she'd gone out for a coffee at the supermarket or had a massage, she was what I would call written up, or she was put on a performance improvement plan. The young woman chose to resign the next day, taking them to a tribunal, and she has won. Steve's in Southampton. Steve, your take on this case. Good morning.
Nick, good morning. This is exactly it. I think you're already sort of alluding to it, and we're doing it to death, but it makes it absolutely impossible. Obviously, neurodiversity is extremely important. I do think we need to talk about how certain industries or there's sectors that able to absorb this. I don't think a lot of employers get enough credit for that. Mm-hmm. I don't want to go into too much detail, but I'm associated with child services or child support industries.
Uh-huh. You're an employer, are you?
Yes. Yeah. Right.
How many staff do you employ, roughly?
It would be between 70 and 80 the minute. The performance management, I think you alluded to it, you know, speaking with your first caller, it makes it very, very difficult to subjectively and appropriately manage the difference between what is an individual struggling with their neurodiversity and actually at the point where do you draw the line and say, again, you've...
But it makes it impossible, doesn't it?
You've drifted off to a massage at 2 o'clock, but then the conversation that will follow, you know, with the performance management and the relevant line management will be, well, I felt particularly vulnerable at that period. And then from an employer, it is broken glass. It is extremely difficult to then sort of progress that. But just as a bit of a diverse bit on the industries, totally separate, I also had a commercial aviation license. And so when you then have to apply the difference in sort of the psychology of, okay, how do we approach this? I don't think that employers get given enough credit for how hard they have to work, how careful they have to be, and how supportive they actually already are. And I think, like, this case, you know, the employer wasn't provided, in my opinion, with sufficient information where they could have actually perhaps taken a different view against this young lady and maybe made a bit more accommodation. They took it on the basis of the information they had and the feedback, which was, we are not being serviced, you know, by our representative. And they, instead of going down a disciplinary route, you know, directly, they went, OK, let's see if we can improve that performance. Let's see if we can offer you the help. I don't think that was recognised. I think this case, in my opinion, sets a very difficult or dangerous precedent going forward, would be my honest opinion.
As an employer, can I just ask you a couple of other questions about the workplace? What was the impact of last year's budgets as regard national insurance hikes, and what might the impact be of the workers' rights legislation that's come in as of yesterday?
So you know, this particular sector is at the minimum wage or the lower end sector, right? Which therefore makes it extremely difficult anyway, because you're already a very low pay scale sector. It relies on input from both government funding and also parents providing funding. Challenging, Nick. But you know what I would say is that no different to many, many other sectors under this wonderful and non-workers government that we appear to have.
Strong words, Steve. Good luck with all the people you employ. Thank you for that. We'll continue that, but we want to talk Erasmus as well. It is on. It has returned. That is a fact. Announced about 11 minutes ago. Maxine's in Greenwich. This is for your son, is it? Good morning.
Yes. Hi, Nick. Hi. Yes. I actually texted him last night when I saw that the Erasmus was back, because he actually did the first year of the Turing scheme, which is the one that this...
Tell me what the... I'm quickly looking. What is the Turing scheme? You've got me. Tell me what that was.
Okay, so when we left the EU in 2016, one of the things that we lost was access to Erasmus. So the government at the time put in place an alternative scheme called Turing.
More than 41,000 in study and work placements areas across the world during the academic year. On you go. Got it. Yep.
So he was studying French at Newcastle University and so had to go abroad. He went to Nancy, which is in northeast France.
Yes.
And so all the things that have been trumpeted about returning to Erasmus, which I think is fantastic, feels a bit like window dressing, because under Turing, from what our experience was, he didn't have to pay additional fees to study at the university over there. So that was exactly the same as Erasmus. There were two things that he had to do, which was quite complicated. The first one was he had to pay additional fees to do the language study in France, which Erasmus students from the European Union didn't have to pay. So we had to support him with that.
Right.
But the real challenge was actually freedom of movement, because neither of us are EU citizens. He had to get a visa, and that was the most complicated thing ever, because it was the first time that either of us, myself, my husband, and our son, had to consider about travelling to Europe and living in Europe, and we had to get a visa to live there.
Remind me, we're allowed 180 days in every 365, aren't we, or something?
Yeah.
Like,
but he had to apply for a visa, and it's actually, that's the complicated bit. Now, whether as part of the new Erasmus arrangement, that will possibly be the same issue for students that are doing Erasmus from 2027, or whether as part of the new Erasmus, that has been removed. But that's the technicality. The technical difference is that, you know, because we're no longer in Schengen.
Yep.
In order to study abroad for the year that he was there, he had to get a visa, and we've never done that before.
And it's a lengthy process.
It is, and he had to do it really quickly, because in order to get accommodation, he had to have a visa. So there are lots of things you have to line up in order to then go, and it was really squeaky bum time, as I would say, right at the last minute.
How expensive is it getting a visa?
It wasn't particularly expensive, but it was just having to navigate the system for the first time. Mm. That was the thing, knowing that you weren't doing the wrong thing.
Birth certificates, your birth certificate, his father's birth certificates, your marriage certificate, all that kind of stuff, presumably.
All those kind of things that we had to get, you know, income, proving income, insurance, which you have to get living abroad anyway.
How did it benefit the boy?
Oh, absolutely. He absolutely loved it. In fact, he's about to apply under the British Council to go back to teach abroad.
Oh, really?
And it was transformative for him. He started out as quite a shy young man who was part of the COVID generation, who came home from sixth form and was told, that's it, you're done. You're not sitting your exam. So it was quite an impact on him. So the ability to study abroad, he made friends abroad that come and visit him, and he goes to visit them.
That's cool.
He's really, really confident and wants to go back.
And they're a nice crowd, his mates from Nancy.
Yes, they are.
How
fantastic.
Yeah,
they're a really nice crowd. So it's a great thing, but it's that visa that people have to watch out for. And I'm hoping that they would have sorted that aspect out as part of the new scheme as well.
Only announced about 15 minutes ago. Obviously, there'll be more meat on the bone of that, and we'll listen out for it, Max. And give your son my best wishes for his career. Sounds like he did really well out of that. We'll continue this conversation and come back to ADHD for employers after the 9:45 LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
Resident doctors in England are beginning their five-day strike. A 15-year-old boy has been charged with the murder of 9-year-old Aria Thorpe in Weston-super-Mare. The surviving suspect in the Bondi Beach attack has been charged with 59 offences, including terrorism and murder. LBC weather, largely cloudy with showers, heavier rain in the west, a high of 12 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. It's slow on the M1 northbound. There's one lane closed because a car is having a tyre change between Junction 8 for Hemel Hempstead and Junction 9 for Redbourne. There are queues in Cranford. The A4 Bath Road westbound is closed because of an accident between Barclay Avenue and Way Avenue. In Lewisham, there are long delays on the A20 Lewisham Way westbound because of the roadworks near Lewisham College. There's only one Woolwich ferry running because of technical problems. There's disruption affecting flights at London City Airport and Luton Airport because of the fog. On the Tube, there's no service on the Bakerloo line between Queen's Park and Harrow and Wealdstone because of an investigation. And on the trains, Greater Anglia and Stansted Express have delays of up to 15 minutes and some cancellations between Liverpool Street and Stansted Airport.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
As Erasmus reopens, I wonder why we're not more enthusiastic about learning other languages. And why have caesarean sections overtaken natural births?
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Welcome to the Co-op Meal Deal Generator. To generate today's deal, say, give me something tasty. Here we go. It's a chicken and bacon sandwich, scotch egg, and a bottle of Lucozade. Only £3.75 for Co-op members. Co-op. Owned by you, right by you.
Non-members £4.10 subject to availability. Prices may vary. Co-op Group Food Stores only £1 joining fee.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
When you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you.
Life feels better with a smile. Fanning Dental Group Clinics. Modern, comfortable and affordable dentistry for all. See online for our price match promise. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling and the whole world smiles with you.
Banningdental.co.uk.
40 million people listen to commercial radio each week. That's 80 million ears, give or take. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org.
For people living with dementia, Christmas can be confusing, overwhelming, heartbreaking. Families are often left to cope alone. But you can help a family reimagine Christmas. Donate to Alzheimer's Society and you can help provide practical support, expert advice and crucial companionship this Christmas. It will take a society to beat dementia and we can't do it without you. Search Alzheimer's Society and donate today.
At Fidelity, we've been helping our customers plan for their retirements for nearly 20 years. From understanding how much you'll need to combining multiple pensions, we offer expert insights, excellent service, and even financial advice, so you can feel confidently invested in your future. For pensions, advice, or investment accounts, be invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Transferring is not right for everyone. Terms apply.
What should you put on your Christmas list this year? Aldi! We're Quality Food Award Christmas Retailer of the Year for the sixth year in a row. And which cheapest supermarket of the year 4 years running? Get Christmas all wrapped up at Aldi. Visit aldi.co.uk/awards for more.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Come back to driving tests in a moment, but ADHD in the workplace. Mike in Crawley, I might sub this a little bit, but he writes, presumably every employer has now to be a qualified psychiatrist. If you have an underperforming member of staff who keeps any condition secret, it's your fault. They fail to accommodate what you do not know. What I do know, says Mike, is that from the day someone decided prizes for all, we seem to be breeding a society where hands have to be held, egos stroked, conditions have to be understood, and everyone and everything has to be placated. Heaven knows how population got through the Second World War. Ben in Barnet, I have ADHD. I have to manage my behaviour and work around my lack of organisation. I don't expect the rest of the world to change to suit me. It's so exhausting listening to the voice of yet another small group of society demanding everyone to bend to their will. I'm thinking the term snowflake, snowflakes, is worth reviving because every time I turn on the radio, someone is moaning about being offended about something or other. Keep them coming. Let's talk driving tests with Claire in Romford. Claire, what do you do for a living?
Good morning. Nick, I've been a driving instructor for over 25 years.
Oh, wow.
And it has gone down, but today I am so grateful for LBC to bring this up because a lot of people are blaming instructors.
Well, that seems a bit unfair. It's not your fault.
No, but that's how it is. Mm. And the thing is, we've contacted the government, we've spoken to examiners, and they say they know it's going on, and they don't do anything about it. So what I'm talking about is anyone out there with children that are doing driving tests, please keep on to your theory test certificate. Do not give it to an instructor.
How long are they good for?
They only last for 2 years, which is another thing that needs to be brought up, because this can probably expire by the time a test comes up. And as the other girl said, it took her 7 times to do it. You take 7 times the cost of that.
I don't know how much. Slow down. I don't know, Claire, how much the cost is. I there weren't theory tests right around when I took my test.
I think it was about £25. It's gone up, it's come down, and different. But you imagine putting a person through 7 tests or whatever theory tests, and then when they come to do their test, it can't be got.
Right.
And then it expires. But let's go back. Let's talk about the thing where people are paying extortionate costs for a driving test. So what happens is some unscrupulous instructors, the majority are not, but they are there. And we've reported them, and again, it's not been picked up.
Right.
And they can charge up to £300-400 for driving test. So what they do is they book a test with a pupil's theory test certificate, and then they hold that test. And then when they are needing a test, they go, oh, I've got you a cancellation, but it's going to cost you £300. They've probably only paid the £62.50.
That's outrageous.
It is, but nothing's been done, Nick. And the other thing...
Well, that's going to be changed as of April, isn't it? Because only the pupil can apply.
Well, that's all I've ever done, because then they can arrange it themselves.
Mm.
But on the day, they say then they have to pay an admin fee. They should pay a 2-hour fee for the car on the day, and it's up to the examiner to make sure, the instructor, that car is clean, so it can't be refused the test. So now what they're doing, the unscrupulous are charging admin to get the car ready, and this needs to be picked up. And then let's talk about it and test itself, Nick. I just thought after 25 years, I'll just cut down, I'll be an examiner. I went for the test, and this is not sour grapes, I never got it. The reason is I was asked every question on benefits, on shipping, on housing. And
sorry, you were asked questions on shipping as regards a driving instructor, examiner.
Examiner, yeah.
Can you recall what the question was?
Yeah, it was how I would log them in order to be put on the ship. Now, I'm going for a driving examiner job.
That's extraordinary.
I'm not going for shipping. I'm not going... Honestly, Nick, this needs to be blown open because we are so short of driving examiners. We've got driving instructors falling out of the sky. There is hundreds of them.
Mm.
And where I live, it's actually doubled the amount of instructors. I've recently left... ADI for my own reasons, for personal reasons, obviously I don't want to go into, but the people that want to be driving examiners are not even getting through.
Well, I'm not surprised if they're asking questions about shipping. That's ludicrous.
Well, who knows about benefits?
No. Well, what sort of question did they ask you about benefits then?
Well, one of them was what criteria was needed before I got universal credit.
And what has that got to do with being...
Nothing. And when I questioned it, they said that when you're a driving examiner, you are classed as management, and therefore you can move around in all sectors.
Oh.
So whoever is in the DVSA, which we've had one recently resign because this was not being resolved, and that is the reason why it was done. But this needs to be addressed.
It really does. Claire, safe drive. I have to go. I hear what you say. Everyone has heard what you're saying. Thank you for ringing in. Same subject. Ben, thank you, Claire. Ben in Oxfordshire. I'm a driving instructor. This problem is going on since we came out of COVID in 2020 and 2021. We've been repeatedly promised by the DVSA this would be sorted. The whole system is in a shambles. I wouldn't be surprised if this isn't sorted by 2027. That's the latest deadline. Samantha Price-Turner, as well as the bots being an issue, the lack of examiners is a huge issue. My daughter's had two tests cancelled in the past 5 weeks due to lack of examiners, exactly what you're hearing from Claire. She has another book for the 15th of January next year. We're hoping it's third time lucky for her to attempt it. Well, good luck to her for that. Rob's in Ivor on this. Rob, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Hi, Nick. Good morning. Just to bring you up to date with what's happened with my son.
Yes.
He got to the level of competency for his test. His instructor said book the test. He got a test date for May of next year.
Right.
So he had to have all the lessons until May.
Right.
And then we found out about this online site. He paid £350 extra.
How did you find out about it? His mates told him or something, did they?
Yeah. They're all doing it. All the youngsters are doing this. They're going online because all the tests are being block booked by a robot or something.
Mm.
And I just feel for all the young people out there trying to get on in the future and everything, and they can't because they're being scammed. Yeah, it's costing enough for the driving lessons itself.
So did he pay the money then to get his test?
He did. He paid the £350. He took his test last week. He's passed. It's great.
Right.
But it's just £350, which he could have spent on his car or the insurance.
Yeah, you know, it's the insurance.
It's just wrong, Nick.
And is all his mates roughly doing the same thing, Rob, to try and get behind the wheel, I imagine?
Everybody's doing it, and everybody's being scammed because they cannot get a test when they want it. I mean, if you know, to wait 2 or 3 weeks for a test is fine, but 6 months?
No, it's not fair. I can't remember. I mean, it's so long ago that I passed my test, but I'm certain it wasn't like that. Rob, safe driving to the boy. Glenn's in Pontefract. Glenn, what do you tell me? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. How are you?
Grand, thank you. Trust you are in Ponty.
Yeah, fantastic, mate. Yeah, good. My son, we're over at Manchester University.
Yeah.
Nick wanted to pass his test, so decided to go through one of the driving instructors with the accelerated learning and test.
Yep.
So paid £400.
Right.
Learned how to drive, had his lessons, had about 12 lessons, but had to pay for the lessons additionally to this £400.
Right.
And then when he applied for the test, it was months and months and months.
Right.
But these people had said, oh, no, we can get you a test, we can get you a test. Eventually, after about 8 months, he had to take him to small claims court.
Right.
To get his money back. Fortunately, once he sent the letter from the small claims court,
they paid
him his money back. But he still hasn't passed his test.
But what a waste of time and effort and energy for the poor lad.
It is now, because he's going to have to learn again, because obviously he's not got a car, lives over in Manchester. The public transport in Manchester is fantastic, so it's not like it is over here where
it's probably easier not to have a car, in all honesty, in Manchester, isn't it? It probably makes more sense, in truth.
To be honest, I've tried to persuade him not to get one, but you know what kids are like.
That's why we have them. We're always wrong. The first job of being a parent is that you are wrong, and you pretty much start from that position. Glenn, give him my best wishes. I hope he gets that test as and when he can get a date through. You are the last word of the day. Now, if you missed any of today's show, listen back on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app, where you can stay up to date with all the latest news and opinion, put your news catches in the order you want, pause and rewind live radio and listen to a range of podcasts. Download the all-new official LBC app for free from your app store now. I'm done. James O'Brien's the other side of the news on LBC. I'm with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and it is a rare shaft of good news that breaches the gloomy outlook both domestically and internationally this morning. A Brexit reset deal is on the verge of being agreed for the UK to join the EU's Erasmus programme. Now, don't sort of shoot the messenger, but this will be greeted with joy in many middle-class households because, for reasons that I don't currently understand but hope to do so by 11 o'clock, learning foreign languages, the importance, the beauty, the life-changing impacts of speaking other languages do not seem to be appreciated in this country as deeply or as widely as they are elsewhere. And I'd like you to tell me why.
On your radio,
on the LBC app and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, a five-day walkout by resident doctors in England is underway in their dispute over pay and jobs. Health officials say people should still come forward for urgent care if they need it. LBC's Fraser Knight reports from a picket line in London.
What do we want?
Pay restoration.
When do we want it?
The latest offer from the government was rejected by resident doctors earlier this week. They say overwhelmingly, but the timing of this strike, just as flu cases soar, the NHS is under a huge amount of pressure. It's led Wes Streeting, the Health Secretary, to slam the British Medical Association for, he says, not caring about patients.
A 15-year-old boy is due in court charged with murdering a 9-year-old girl who was stabbed in Somerset. Emergency services were called to Weston-super-Mare earlier this week. LBC's Thea Rickard has more.
Avon and Somerset police tell us she was found dead in one of the houses on Lyme Close in Weston-super-Mare when officers arrived there at just before 6:10 on Monday evening. And just 7 minutes later, we're told the teenage boy was arrested on suspicion of murder.
A man's been charged with murder and terrorism over the Bondi Beach attack. Navid Akram, who is 24, is accused of opening fire on a Hanukkah event on Sunday, killing 15 people. The first funerals for the victims are being held in Sydney. It's been confirmed the UK will rejoin the European Union's student exchange scheme. It means British young people will be able to study or train under the Erasmus programme from January 2027. Negotiations on rejoining were announced as part of the post-Brexit reset deal in May. Inflation's fallen to its lowest level since March. Prices rose by 3.2% in the year to November, down from 3.6% a month earlier. Lower food prices were the main driver of the fall. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was up 135 points, 98.20. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.14. LBC weather, largely cloudy with showers today, some heavier rain in the west. There is a weather warning in the West Country, a high of 12 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission. And it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after ten, and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. This is going to sound slightly ridiculous, but we had our little Christmas lunch yesterday. Do you know my team now stretches to 8 people across the various empires that I oversee, sort of the radio show and then, of course, the podcasts. And we went out for Chinese food, which has become our tradition on this programme. And one of my colleagues, one of my younger colleagues, is one of those people who knows her way around a Chinese restaurant menu in a really inspiring fashion. A lovely thing to watch. And it occurred to me, oddly, this morning, that it's a mark of our, is it insularity? Because I'm afraid that I, historically, am very much a sort of sweet and sour king prawns, egg fried rice kind of character. But if you're happy or lucky enough to work next to London's Chinatown, then really you should be digging into the menu, particularly the dim sum menu, in ways that are constantly throwing up new treats and delights. And that was one of the lovely things about yesterday's lunch. Keith ordered sweet and sour chicken balls, of course, as is his wont, but we all tried dishes that we hadn't tried before. And it just occurred to me how I don't like the word insular, but that is the word I've got, I'm afraid. That's the only word I've got. And that thought bubbled to the surface of my brain this morning as I greeted news regarding the Erasmus Student Exchange Scheme. A couple of things to say. before we get stuck into the question of why we, as a nation, are so unenthusiastic about learning foreign languages. Now, listen, this isn't one of those things, well, hang on a minute, I speak 17 languages, James. How dare you suggest that we're all unenthusiastic? I'm not saying we're all unenthusiastic about speaking foreign languages, but I think it is a measurable fact that we embrace foreign language learning with rather less alacrity and enthusiasm than almost all comparable countries would do. And that will be the question I open up shortly. But before that, this is Brexit related. And this, of course, this programme is the home of Brexit truth. So we should probably reflect upon the, what's the opposite of every cloud has a silver lining? Every silver lining has a cloud. Every oyster has a bit of grit in it. There isn't a figure of speech, is there, to express the idea that all good news has a sort of small side order of less good news. Every silver lining has a cloud, I suppose. But this is a reminder of what not being in the European Union looks like. And I think all of us have a degree of arrogance, almost jingoistic arrogance, born of having been in it for so long. We presume, well, two things, really. We presume that we will be treated differently from other third countries because we're British, for goodness sake, if you're jingoistic. Or, hang on a minute, we were in the middle of it until very, very recently. Surely that gives us more clout, more credibility, more status in negotiations than it would if we'd never been in it at all. And of course it doesn't. And that's quite a bitter pill to swallow, whether you're a Leaver or a Remainer, whether you're deluded or whether you are married to facts and evidence. Because it feels wrong, right? It's a bit like the old analogy that we used about handing in your gym membership but feeling aggrieved that you can't pop in every now and again and use the facilities. I don't want to be a member on a monthly basis. I just want to do some bench presses every other week, or I just want to pop in and have a sauna. But you can't because you're not a member anymore. So even if you've been a member for 50 years, if you surrender your membership tomorrow, then by Friday you will have exactly the same rights as someone who has never been a member at all. And that's us now. So the negotiations over Erasmus were quite hard to process because it is a reminder that not only are we now in exactly the same position of any country in the world that has never been a member of the European Union, but we are also a junior partner in a negotiation. We have less to offer. The greatest myth of all, of course, was that they needed us more than we needed them. So even if you are a passionate pro-European, pro-EU, you look at this story and think, hang on a minute. And that's just the way it is now. So it was reported not long ago that this wasn't going to happen because the EU was demanding too much in return, whether it was going to cost Britain money or whether there were going to be links to other areas of negotiation, whether it was going to be an unbalanced deal, why the EU would offer us anything without getting quite a lot, arguably more, in return, was really strong evidence of what I'm trying to describe. The simple fact that we kind of go to them as a supplicant. That's a great word, isn't it? I love that word. We go to them as a supplicant. We go to them as, and it's the same in our negotiations with the United States now, is that we go. That's why Trump has paused the tech deal that was signed amid great fanfare during that ludicrous state visit. He's now pressed pause on that because he will tighten the thumbscrews. He will demand more from the United Kingdom in return for what was already on the table from the United States. We have become a less powerful trading partner than we were when we were members of the largest trading bloc in the history of humanity. That's not a Brexit relitigation, by the way. That's just a statement of fact. It's not even an opinion. It's just counting. So what is it? Did anyone come up with an answer to the question of what's the polar opposite of every cloud has a silver lining? Every bit of good news has a little bad news with it, because it's great news that we're rejoining Erasmus, but it is also bad news, I think, that you can't have the rainbow without the rain. Does that work? Is that's Andrew in Sutton Coldfield? I quite like that. I've never heard that before. Have you heard that before? You can't have the rainbow without the rain. That's nice. But it doesn't quite do the job that I'm looking for. It has been a reminder, this announcement this morning, that we are simply supplicant. We go to the EU.